within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Why, yes, it is. It's 1 minute and 18 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of May in the year of our Lord 2007. Thank you for coming by and making it part of your listening day. Why, hello. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program, broadcasting from lovely, beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Thank you so much. 503-733-2970. You can, I'm looking at to see you can prepare your MacArthur Park jokes right now. Apparently, there were hippies beaten senseless in MacArthur Park yesterday. MacArthur Park is something, something, wham! MacArthur Park, something, rubber bullets. This is why we have to have all this listener help to write this Portland anthem. I clearly have exhausted my lyric writing abilities on the previous project, but I've got nothing left. Anywho, all right. It's 503-733-2970. By the way, speaking of shipless hippies, I would like to thank them all for blocking my my trip through downtown Portland yesterday. Thanks. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. Because I drove. This is what I get for not bicycling, by the way. This was my karma.
It's your punishment.
It really was. No, it was. And I was, if it makes you feel better, I was, because as they say in the Catholic Church, it is not enough simply to repent for one's sins. Must one be full? Hey, hello. You know what would make these breaks sound better is if I wrote them all out in advance and then recorded them on the audio box. Or whatever that thing is called. That Vox Pro thing. In fact, why don't we just start taping all of our breaks in advance on this program? Recording them all into a piece of audio editing software and then playing them back. And then send out a lot of memos boasting about how we have live air personalities. Anyway, I'm sorry. Was that out loud?
Wow.
You know if I'd recorded this...
You said I was being catty.
You know, if I'd recorded this break in advance, I could have taken that segment out before I played it back off a computer, pretending it was live.
Or being paid big money to be live.
Yes. Anywho, that's okay. I can't even put words in the right order. Really, who am I to be? Who am I to make assessments, really? I can't even put my adverbs in the right place today. No, but it makes you feel better because the Catholic city, one must be fully cognizant of the nature, the scope and breadth and depth and width and girth of one's sins. And as I was trying to drive through downtown, because I just, doubly bad because it's May Day and we were supposed to be dancing around a pole and talking about Vladimir Lenin or something. And I drove my big-ass guzzling truck, my huge 4Runner. Which is not really, and I don't really view it as being an SUV as such, because it's really kind of too old to be an SUV. It really is just a truck. But it gets terrible gas mileage. I mean, it gets like 3 miles to the gallon. I mean, it's just dumb, but I might as well be driving a Sherman tank. And I had done that thing of just pushing, and it's so old, actually, that there's no indicator light on the dashboard to tell me when I'm about to run out of gas. And I've never actually bottomed it out. I've never actually run out of gas. I don't think I've ever run out of gas in either of my automobiles. Because the Focus has that little light that goes on, and I want to uncork some whole discussion again about how long you have before the car runs out of gas when the little indicator light goes on, because I don't really care that much. And because I am really anal about keeping the cars full of gas. You know who's not, though, is my wife. Is it because she knows that I'll do it? That's the thing. She is, and I don't want to sit and complain about this, but she is fully aware that if she just drives the car all the way down to empty to where it's just fume-filled, that I will go and fill it up because I am absolutely obsessive-compulsive because I have run out of gas before. I've run out of gas in the middle of nowhere. And not like in the middle of nowhere like in Death Valley, but I mean, you know, I run out of gas in the middle of, like, Prosser, which is no fun. Oh, I'm not
Prosser.
Prosser.
I barely knew her.
Prosser.
Oh, I've been to Prosser.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine running out of gas in the middle of that place.
That's
at
not
2
good.
In the morning. That's a lot of fun. Prosser, it's like running out of gas in the middle of Irrigan or Pendleton and, you know, Umatilla, one of those places. So I'm real anal about keeping the car full, so I drive the truck to work yesterday, though, and there's no time. It was running late. There's no time to put gas in it. So I leave here, and I realize if I try to go across the Ross Island Bridge, I'm just going to get snarled in traffic. My car's going to run out of gas, the 4Runner, and I'm just going to be stuck on the bridge, and I'm going to be the jackhole who is blocking traffic everywhere. And so there is a gas station. There's like a Shell station up on about 4th and...
I don't know, like fourth and I don't know, whatever the hell, fourth and Lincoln or something. It's kind of toward PSU or whatever the hell that, you know, downtown. So I'm going there. And, of course, I missed the turnoff because I'm retarded. And so I got to go all the way down and loop around again. And I go down just far enough that I get caught in the middle of a bunch of a-holes. Just a bunch of people clogging the road for no good goddamn reason. Screwing me. Not that, and I'm only, I mean, really, I am only the man in the broadest possible sense. I mean, you really have to widen the definition of the man. It's so unbelievably broad to include me. Now, I realize that I am whitey. And I mean, that's something. But I'm really not the man in any real way. And so I got it from both ends, too, because the hippies were blocking my forward motion. And then I look at them
back after the show yesterday. Meet Chuck Palahniuk.
Yes.
I almost got stuck flying critical mass.
Oh, goddamn. Yeah, so my forward motion is blocked by the hippies.
And they look at you like you don't ride your bike. I'm like, I drive my car like twice a week. Stop glaring at me. I'm usually on my bike with you.
Bicycle guys behind me, and as much as irritating as, and you know what this is like, too. And I realize that I uncork this about twice a year, but you know how irritating it is when you're driving down the road and there's one bicyclist in front of you who realizes that he is going about 30 miles an hour less than you are, yet refuses to get out of your way, refuses to move over. And I say this as a sometimes, not recently, but as an occasional bicyclist who gets out of the way of automobiles that I got to get around me. Now imagine about 700 of those guys who are not inclined to move for you in any way. So there's just nowhere I can go. And I'm just living this waking nightmare of realizing that my truck is about to run out of gas. But fortunately, it did not. Anyway, so that was my karma yesterday for not biking. So thanks for that. Appreciate it. Anyway. It is 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. If you'd like to be part of today's program with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your corrections, your two cents, your what have you, 503-733-2970. You can also email if you'd like, if you want to engage with us electronically. It is rick@rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com, or you can call us today. It's 503-733-2970. I forgot to find out yesterday what our phone number spells out. I don't think it spells out anything. This guy sent me a website you can go to, and you punch in your phone number, and it'll tell you what your phone number spells. And my cell phone number spells nothing. Lars' phone, none of those things spell anything. Let me see if I can find out. 503-733-2970. Let's find out right now. This is from phonespell.org. That's phonespell.org. Phonespell.org. Okay, so 503-733-2970. 503-P-by-70. Okay. There you go. How about this? 503-PX-70.
P-A-X?
P-A-X.
P-A-X?
P-E-E-A-X. I sound like Pee Wee Herman in that movie. Contact Pee Wee Herman. That's P-E-E. All right, so there you go. You can call us at 503-P-by-70 if you'd like to. 503-P-by-70. That is 50. I'm going to start saying that every day now. Just because it doesn't make any sense. Hold on, I'm going to write that down. 503. That's P-E-E-B-Y. 70. 503-733-2970. That's 503-P-by-70. It sounds like...
sounded insane.
It sounds like some sort of a product they would advertise on one of those weekend infomercials here. Like the big... Like those big bottles of, like, B12 crap that the talk radio stations were always hawking on the weekend. And it would be... What's his name? That David Trudeau guy. The mega memory and health guy. I'm here talking about my new product, P-by-70. All right. 503... P-by-70, ladies and gentlemen. Or 503-733-2970. Coming up on today's program, speaking of godless hippies, Jim Roop is going to be talking about hippies who were shot with rubber bullets. And I've never, I'm unclear about what damage rubber bullets can actually do to you, but I'm sure he'll clarify that later on today. Yeah, Bob Noodles Constantini will be joining us from the Hill today to talk about Bush putting down a big veto boot on this Democratic Iraq spending bill, which is great because it just ensures more fun and frivolity for all of us as the Democrats continue to engage in pointless, incompetent politics. What else do we have here? I believe, Scotty, you'll have to clarify this. I believe we have Peter Carlin coming up today because I feel really bad because that's like 2 weeks in a row that we got that guy and then we bumped him. Sort of like when it would... I don't think this happens much anymore because I think things are so regimented and formatted. But there used to be on the old Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, he would... well, let's say 2 o'clock because here's the thing, Scotty. I blame myself for this. Well, no, I'll blame you. I mean, it really is my fault, but I'll blame you anyway. I think the problem with Peter Carlin comes when we book him at the bottom of the hour, and then if we run behind, it's like 2:55 by the time we get him on. If we book him at the top of the hour, let's say 2, then even if we're running a little late, we still have time to get him. All right, yeah, so let's say 2. But on the old Tonight Show, Johnny would come out and he would say, hey, coming up in tonight's program, we'll be talking to Joan Embry of the San Diego Zoo, also Robert Klein, plus the music of Amy Grant or whatever. And then whoever he listed last in his opening monologue, there was about a 50-50 chance that they were going to end up getting bumped. And you would watch all the way to the end of the program, and you could totally picture whoever it was. It was always just some no-name band or just some jackhole artist that you'd never heard of before. And you always knew just how sad they were. You could just picture them in the green room just drinking the free gin that was put out there, trying to alcohol themselves into oblivion to numb the pain of being bumped from the Tonight Show that night. So I feel bad that we've been doing that to Peter Carlin. So we will get him. Let's try to get him at 2 o'clock today. What else? Oh, speaking of guests, these have been sort of stacking up, and we'll get to these today. We have a pile of bad guests that we've been offered. Who wants to interview Larry the Cable Guy? It's like I'm being punished for something. Apparently he's available for a phone interview. Please let me know if you are interested. Synopsis of his new film below. Imagine the synopsis of a Larry the Cable Guy film. Scotty, would you like to interview Larry the Cable Guy? I bet you're... Are you a Larry the Cable Guy fan? Be honest.
Oh, I bet he is.
Don't lie or I'll know. Are you a fan of Mr. Cable Guy and his humor? Not really, but you'll do it. You'll take the bullet. Thank you. All right, so I got a big pile of bad guests we'll go through. Britney Spears returns, but no one cares. We continue to count down until Friday, which is shaping up to be the best program in the history of everything. We're unclear about George Carlin, but we will be interviewing rock and roll icon / legend / golf enthusiast Alice Cooper, as well as TV's Nellie Olson, Alison Arngrim from Little House on the Prairie. So that's coming up. What else later on today? We'll give you the chance to weigh in on somebody else's personal life. You, too, can give advice to the love lorn without any repercussions to your own existence.
Right.
And I had to wait. Sarah heard me talking about this yesterday during a break. I had to wait till today to talk about this because the person was listening yesterday. Now, I changed the names in the story, which I didn't want to do anyway. But I changed the names. My wife made me change the names. But the person was listening yesterday. The person is not listening today. So we will discuss their personal life in excruciating detail today because they're not listening. And here's the thing. And you can see I bullet pointed this out. This is like a step-by-step synopsis of something that happened to a friend of ours recently.
Oh, yeah, and I didn't want to ask you at all yesterday because it sounded pretty good.
I'm going to spring it on you.
Okay.
It's a step-by-step synopsis of something that happened to a friend of ours. And when I say a friend of ours, I mean a mafioso.
Oh.
No, I mean a friend of... Yeah, no, I mean it's a friend of
okay.
My wife and I's. It's a step-by-step synopsis of something that happened to them recently, and then a series, I swear to God, a series of bullet point questions that they want answered about it. And the thing is, I already know how you're going
to
answer
it. Do they want you to answer it, or do they want Laura to answer it?
Well, it's a risk of just of revealing too much in advance. Here's the thing, is that Laura has a friend who we will call Janet. Not her real name. We will call her Janet. Janet is recently single, divorced, kids, da-da-da-da-da, recently single, and met a gentleman on Match.com, and then they went out, and then some things happened and some things didn't happen. And so I swear to God, my wife confronted me with like five really specific bullet point questions that the friend is asking her that she doesn't have the answer for. So the friend asked my wife, she's like, well, what gives with blah, 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 blah. And so my wife in turn asks me, because it's kind of a how guys think sort of a deal. I know that I'm making it sound way too complex, but basically, so the Lara's friend went on a date.
So she went on a date and she needs to know what the guy thinks about her.
Totally. She wants to know if she's doing something wrong or if the guy is just weird. So we'll answer and see. And the great thing is, this lets you be judgmental and weigh in on the personal life of another person with no repercussions to yourself. And I already know how you're going to answer some of these questions. I told Lara that I knew how you would respond. And I'll be curious to see if how you respond is how I think you will. All right. We'll get to that. We will get to that later on today. This is Steve calling about incompetence, and appropriately enough, that's been misspelled on the screen. Hi, Steve.
Hello, this is Steve. I was wondering if you had any more of those free samples that I could get for my prostate.
Steve is...
Because I really need to pee by 7.
I was about to ask if this... Here's the thoughts that went through my head just now. When you first started to speak, I was going to ask if you were putting on a kooky radio voice. And then the second thought was, yes, he is. And then the third thought is, at least you referenced the phone number and it's exciting new...
pee by 7.
70. You should be able to pee by 7 or you're just going to spend a lot of time getting larger.
Yeah, exactly. Have a good one, man.
Okay.
Love the show.
Thank you.
Okay.
I don't typically like kooky radio voices, but that's... I'll give you that one.
We heard some kooky radio voices yesterday.
Where?
When we were up in your office.
Oh, yeah. We were listening to a demo that somebody sent in. Some aspiring talk show host. I won't name who it is. I don't wish to embarrass this person. But an aspiring talk radio host sent me a demo yesterday. No one you know. And said, I would love a 4-hour show with me and like 3 other people, as budget allows. If you're listening right now, let me tell you, the budget allows none of that. Just so you know. So, thanks anyway. 503-733-2970. All right, so we got all that coming up today. We are joined today, as always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. By the way, one day left to see Sarah on the back of the Portland Mercury.
Oh, I need to get one of those, or my mom's going to kill me.
It's online, but it's not the same. You got to have a hard copy.
Yeah.
Now, who are they replacing you with, you know?
I don't know.
All right.
I do not know.
All right, now, have you saved several copies for yourself?
I haven't yet. I need to go get some today before they're gone.
All right, so if you've heard us talk about Sarah on the back of the Mercury, you got to go do that today. Go track one down. Look in the boxes all over town. You see Sarah on the back of the Portland Mercury with her dog, Muppet. It is an adorable photo.
With a bit of pink hair.
It is. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, Britney lip syncs her way to a 15-minute show at San Diego's House of Blues last night. IMS will sue, claiming he wasn't given a warning as stipulated in his $40 million contract. The president and the first lady make an appearance on American Idol, and we'll have more Spider-Man 3 hype.
Fantastic. There you go. Let's see. Oh, this is fantastic. I just got an email from Aaron at Film Fever Radio. He said, dude, Film Fever Radio got offered Larry the Cable Guy, and we turned him down. A podcast program. A program desperate for more attention. And we passed on Larry the Cable Guy. It's really only... tempting, you know, to book Larry the Cable Guy just because he's such an ass and just such a horrible, unlikable, unfunny man. And look, if you're out there and you're a Larry the Cable Guy fan, I mean, whatever. That's your own. I mean, that's on you. I can't tell you not to be Larry the... I mean, I can. You clearly wouldn't listen. I mean, whatever. You know, I mean, look, you're listening. I mean, you're talking to a man who unironically owns a CD by boy band O-Town. So, I mean, I realize that I'm not necessarily always in a position to dictate taste. I'm just saying Larry the Cable Guy is one of the worst things that's ever existed anywhere. So, the only reason I would ever be tempted to get him on is just so I could ask him, like, what... Like, why are you famous?
What are you doing with your
Seriously,
life?
Like, why... How did this happen that you became famous? Here's what we've been offered. I might as well just talk about this right now. Who's he, and I apologize that we did not get Chuck Palahniuk on yesterday. He actually, there's no knock on him. He ended up being late to the studio. He looked
like he'd been run ragged. He's running around everywhere. He said he'd signed like 2,000 books yesterday.
He was in a warehouse somewhere and they were just, he was having to crank out autographs. And again, it didn't seem like he was the coolest guy. We were just sitting. I'll just tell the story here. And then I'll talk about this horrible list of guests we've got. So Chuck Palahniuk was going to be or was on with Corden Fatboy yesterday. They were pre-recording an interview. And so Sarah's a big Palahniuk fan, and I'm kind of a casual Chuck Palahniuk fan. And so Sarah goes home, this is the best part, go to meet an author. This will tell you about his status, because there are a handful of authors that do sort of qualify as rock stars. Stephen King is one of those guys. Tom Clancy, for some people, is that way. You're John Grisham. I don't know if you're fat, Daniel Steele. And then Chuck Palahniuk is that way, too. And probably Douglas Copeland. Anyway, so Sarah goes home, actually changes clothes and redoes her makeup and comes back. And
This is the great thing.
Comes back and sits in my office. And I kind of went even in, too. So we're sitting in my office yesterday afternoon trying to act casual, because Dave Zinn at the front desk has said, he's like, when Mr. Palahniuk arrives, if you'd like, I'll whisk him by your office.
No, he'll do a chuck-by.
A chuck-by? Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
I'll do a chuck-by, if you'd like, and I can just bring Mr. Palahniuk by your office so you can meet him. And I'm like, okay. So Sarah and I are sitting there desperately trying to look casual, as though we are not sitting there waiting for a guy who spends his life in front of a typewriter to come by and say hello to us for 5 seconds. So we're sitting there. Time goes on. He's running like 45 minutes late. And Sarah, who, no knock on you, you're out. You're like Tim. Tim's out of here, you know, out of the studio at like 2:59. And then he goes, you know, and he does the news during Lycus and whatever. But he's 2:59. I'm leaving now. You are out of here at like 3:01. Like 2 minutes later, Sarah is on her bike, wicked witching down the road back to Southeast. So Sarah was here until like 4:35 yesterday. An hour and a half waiting for Chuck Palahniuk.
No, I got back here at 3:45, and then I was here until almost 5 o'clock.
Yeah, and so we're sitting there, and then finally Dave appears with Chuck Palahniuk, and there really just is...
Just with Corden Fatboy freaking out because I thought they were stood up.
And there really is no way... I mean, guys like that never, ever look the way that you think they're going to. Even if you've seen a picture of somebody like that, they never look the way that they're going to. But he was just like, everything everybody ever told us about that guy was true. He was just the mellowest, most down-to-earth, most laid-back guy. And it didn't seem like an act. It didn't seem like, hello, here's my laid-back, mellow author persona.
Totally humble and nice, and we sat and talked to him about his movie prospects, about his books, and, that's so cool.
And can I say this? Take this however you will about Chuck Palahniuk. That's a man with zero body fat.
Seriously.
He has zero body fat and running shoes that probably cost more than my car.
He has bright yellow running shoes on.
Seriously. I would have to take out a loan to buy those running shoes that he had on.
That was so exciting. No, he was so cool and humble and really nice, and we actually got to sit there and, like, you know, shoot the crap with him.
No, it was... What was great, though, is he couldn't quite resist a little bit of boasting, though, in the conversation, because... I forget what you said to him, but I shook his hand and I said, hey, I read Lullaby, a while back. That's a great book. And his first thing, he goes, that's being made into a movie. So choke. That was his first response to me. Was it like, thanks?
No, I think he was just trying to find the topic of conversation.
I'm just saying. Well, no, I brag about it, too. Everything I make is optioned before it's even written. I'm Chuck Palahniuk. Hello, you are no one. I mean, I would totally do that. Anyway, so here's the list of guests that we've had offered to us. God, it's 11:25 already. Do the shows seem like they're going by faster recently? Like there's a quickening of some kind happening? All right. The following are available for interviews for your program. Larry the Cable Guy. Some of these names are familiar to me, but I don't really know who they are. And some of them sound like they're made-up celebrity names. Like, some of these names sound like... like, they're close to being real celebrities, but they're sort of knockoffs. Like Ed O'Ross. Now, doesn't Ed O'Ross sound like he might be a celebrity, but it's just changed enough to be fake? I don't even know that Ed O'Ross is a real person. So we've been offered Larry the Cable Guy, Bill Engvall, DJ Qualls, and I'm unsure about with DJ Qualls. I think he was the guy from Hustle and Flow. I think he was the white guy who produced the song in Hustle and Flow. I'm unsure about whether that's DJ Qualls, like DJ Jazzy J, or whether that DJ is in like Donald Jerome. Keith David, you all know Keith, geeks know Keith David as the voice of Spawn on the HBO cartoon. He was also in Requiem for a Dream. He's the huge, smooth-talking black man that for whom Jennifer Connelly went and performed a sex party. And he's got the great... Keith David has got the greatest voice in the history of the world. Who else do we have here? Lisa Lampanelli, pass. All right. And finally,
Who's Lisa Lampanelli?
Lisa Lampanelli is a big, huge brick wall of a woman. She's a comedian. Her material largely consists. If you saw her at the what roast did I see her at? It was the Shatner roast, I think she was at. She was at some roast recently, and she's kind of a one-trick pony. The vast majority of her material consists about how she has a preference for black men. I mean, it's really awkward. It's really uncomfortable comedy. It really is just a lot of, so I have sex with a lot of black men. And, you know, and I'm huge. And she's just this huge blonde white woman. Not all that funny. Yeah. Anyway, so we've got her. But then... Now, Friday, of course, is the best day because it's Alice Cooper this Friday and TV's Nellie Olson. We've also been offered Joe Pantoliano. He is television's Ralphie from The Sopranos.
Oh, I love that guy.
And he's also What's-His-Guts in The Matrix.
Yeah, he's been in tons of movies.
What did he play in The Matrix? He played the guy in the first Matrix film that betrayed them all?
Yes.
And he's eating that. You know, even though I know the steak isn't real, it still tastes great. That guy.
I know that I know him from a movie I really love.
I can't.
He's in a bunch of, like, crap Disney movies.
And he's
too.
In Bound, too. He's in Bound with Gina Gershon and, what's her name, Tilly. He's the guy that gets his hand cut off in Bound. So they've offered us Joe Pantoliano, who was on, again, in Matrix,
Bound. That guy just seems
Bound.
Like he's pretty cool.
He does, but here's the thing. Remember how David Lynch was on Dennis Miller earlier this week, and it was like the worst interview any of us had ever heard? And Tim and I were commenting about how it sounded for all the world like a bad infomercial. Here's the thing. The dual-edged sword about this, because let's be honest. I think Don and Mike were talking about this the other day, too, that they're not really like an A-list show. We're not even like a Q-list show. And the only reason that they would offer Joe Pantoliano to us is because they're trying to shill something.
He's apparently on the Legend of Secret Pass.
Well, here's the thing. Popular actor wants to discuss... What would you imagine that Joe Pantoliano from The Sopranos wants to discuss?
Global warming.
No? Bipolar mood disorder and mental illness. So that's the thing. Is we can interview Ralphie from The Sopranos this Friday, the same day we have TV's Nellie Olson and Alice Cooper.
And maybe, hopefully, George Carlin.
And they put The Sopranos, the logo for The Sopranos in huge print up here. But basically, we're going to have, like, at least, he's available for a 10 or 15 minute window. But basically, we have to spend at least half of that talking about mental illness and bipolar disorder.
He won an Emmy.
I know, but that's the thing. It's like they're not pitching it as that. They're pitching just talk to him about being crazy. Apparently.
Oh, Goonies. That's what he's.
Oh, that's right. He's in the Goonies too.
I just got a message from Jody.
Yeah. Apparently, he's going to talk about the importance of recognizing, diagnosing, and treating bipolar mood disorder.
Awesome.
So, if we all agree that we could suffer through that, we could ask him some Goonies questions on the. What I would probably do is lead with a Goonies question. Maybe a quick follow-up Sopranos question. Do like 8 minutes of boring mental health talk, because I don't care about the mentally ill.
8 minutes?
Sorry, I mean, that's a lot. But then follow up with like 4 or 5 minutes of real, like, just rapid-fire Sopranos Matrix questions. We'll think about this and come back to it later. Apparently, I can also interview the second drummer for Styx. All right, 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. And the Broadway Bridge is closed again today. Scotty's just not telling me this. He's for another movie screw. hi, Ethan. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, dude. I heard Joe Pantoliano on another radio interview a couple years back. I can't remember who was interviewing him, but the dude was actually really cool. Pretty funny, and was a really good interview.
Now, was it another radio station here in Portland?
It was. And it was like, God, 3-4 years ago,
all right,
possibly.
Now, was he pitching something? Was he pimping something at the time?
I think he was just on as an actor. There might have been a movie coming out. He referred to himself, the guy that was interviewing him, had a hard time pronouncing his last name.
Right, right.
So he was probably like Joey Pants.
All right, we got on this. Now he was a good interview though.
Yes.
All right. Well,
there you go.
Let me ask you your assessment on this. Do you believe, in your opinion, having heard Joe Pantoliano? Now I'm doing it. Joe Pantoliano interview that it's worth suffering through 8 minutes, because that's probably what we're going to have to give him. I figure we'll have to give probably 60% of whatever time we're allotted to a discussion of mental disorders. Now, do you believe that it's worth listening to a 60% mental disorder discussion to get to the 40% of the interview that's about the Goonies and the Sopranos?
Well, I believe the dude was talking about a movie that I could care less about, and he was still pretty interesting to listen to.
Okay,
so,
excellent.
There
thanks,
you go.
Well, all right, we'll pursue it then. Thank you,
all
sir.
All right, thanks.
All right, there you go. And finally, hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
This is Eastman.
Eastman, fantastic. This is Eastman from Buffalo.
Correct.
How are you doing, brother?
Good, Rick. It's good to always be back in the air. I told your screener to put me down as Eastman because I figured that would be an inside joke only you still remember.
Eastman, alias Noah from Buffalo.
That is correct.
See, tell Rick Emerson he doesn't remember old school listeners.
Oh, he does. For those out there listening that don't know me, I was listening back in the day of Yahoo Broadcast, Coast to Coast.
Let me ask you this. How old were you when you first started listening to this radio program?
I was in my senior year in college, so I was probably 21.
And you are how old now?
Well, this Saturday I turned 29.
God damn, I feel old. That's like at the listener party. I met that dude who'd been listening to me since he was in 10th grade. That'll make you feel old. Jesus.
Well, if it makes me feel any better, I feel old, too.
Yeah, good for... I'm glad. I'm not going to suffer alone. How's life on the East Coast, my friend?
Oh, it's cool. My life is interesting, but it's really only to me. But I wanted to tell you, I just checked out a video on YouTube of the final countdown.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. And I think I've seen pictures of Sarah, but is that the woman you wake up on the bench?
I'm sorry?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the welcome back video that we filmed when the show first returned to the air, yes.
Who's the other guy? That's not Clyde Lewis.
There's Tim Riley.
Tim Riley, okay.
Tim Riley, our intrepid news director here on the Rick Emerson Show. Yeah, that's a video we made back in 2006 when this program first returned to the airwaves of CBS Radio.
That's really cool, and there was some other video you had. It was a neat video. I liked the music of you walking towards the camera.
There's a whole bunch. You go to
YouTube, I think it was.
Well, and rickemerson.com has a gallery of photos and videos and crap.
That's where I found it. But there was some other video you did. I can't remember, but it was at the end. Someone came running up to you for an autograph, and you looked as if you were doing, let's just say, a recreational activity with fine processed powder.
That was the backstage video that they filmed for our listener party last April. That was a sort of behind the curtain, like a pseudo backstage video that led to our taking the stage at the listener party, yeah.
I thought that was one of the funny. So every order happens, someone gives them, like, someone gives the fan the taser.
Yeah, no, that's it. Those were all done by our good friend Joni DeRoshi. So, yeah, those are all on YouTube out there.
All right, now, Sarah, I heard you comment a second ago. You like Joe Pantino, his name, I can't pronounce his name.
Pantoliano.
Pantoliano. He was in The Goonies, he was in The Matrix, but a lot of people may not recognize him. He was also in Memento.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Don't Trust This Man. He was the guy you don't trust.
Teddy. Do not believe his lies.
Do not believe his lies. Okay, well, we have to book him now.
I remember one of the things about your audience is we always are able to remember stupid little things that you may not, or inane amounts of trivia. I'm sure you to fill the internet.
It is true. Are you listening via podcast now?
No, Rick, I don't have a pod. I'm doing it really old school. I call the phone, ask your screener, what's Rick talking about? You try to join in or listen on the delay.
You get a chance, go to 970.am. There's some downloadable MP3s there. You can listen to the show.
You tell me there's a way to listen about an hour behind.
Yeah, 970.am, and then you go to my website. There's some listener podcasts that get put up even faster.
I thought I was the last person in the world to get an answering machine. I still don't have an iPod. I don't have a device. I have an MP3 player, but I don't have any iPods.
Hey, can I mention the time that you sent me the new pictures of those girls you were having relations with?
Sure, go ahead. Bring the audience in on this.
Well, there you go. I don't even remember why. I just remember that I opened up my email one time, and you're like, dude, here's some nude pictures of girls I'm banging.
It all had to do with your old shows. I mean, harkening back to really old days, I remember there was a great female fan that called in the show and saying, it's harder for a woman to get laid than a man. You're laughing over the microphone over saying, are you out of your mind?
Right, yeah.
No, he helps her get hooked up. And I was just talking about getting laid on the internet from women I meet from various sites that dealt with this.
And then the next thing, like, I opened my email box, like, here you go. And it's like some blurry cell phone photograph of just like an ass filling the screen.
All right, what Rick's referring to is I was able to arrange two women at the same time. And every guy has that fantasy. And I jokingly decided I better get proof of this because no one will ever believe me. So I took photos of them in front of my Sabres pennant.
Yeah.
So it would prove it was a legitimate photo.
Underneath the school pennant for that little hint of porn movie
class. No. The Sabres. The Buffalo Sabres. My hockey team.
Ah, yes. See, this is what I get for not being a sports fan. All right, my brother. We're late. We got to bail here.
Great to talk, Rick.
All right. Thank you, Eastman. He came out of the East to battle the amazing Rando. He's Eastman. What a strange show again today. This is like yesterday, when at the very beginning of the show, guys were just calling up to say, like, so anyway, I had some great pickles last week. And then, like, that was the extent of the call. All right, back after this with Bob Costantini. You say this is the Rick Emerson Show. Joe Pantoliano. I'm pretty sure this is from The Matrix. This music right here. You know, man, God bless that Matrix soundtrack. Where would talk radio shows be without it? Yeah, apparently I can interview the second drummer for Styx. We're going to be here with Def Leppard at the Clark County Amphitheater. Wednesday, September 12th, I will not be gone. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Apparently, Def Leppard continues to be one of the most important forces in rock music. No, Scotty, they're not offering us Def Leppard. Scotty, we need to interview Def Leppard. Yes, do it. Here's the thing. They're not offering... They're offering us... They're not even offering us Styx. They're offering the second drummer from Styx, who's some guy that no one cares about. I guess I could bring him on and just ask him Def Leppard questions. I should totally do that. We should book... Yeah, I'll get Def Leppard. Okay, you go ahead and do that. We should totally book the drummer from Styx and then just... So what's it like to be with Def Leppard? What's your favorite Def Leppard song? What's the Def Leppard tour bus like? Do you like Def Leppard videos?
Yeah.
All right, 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth, Jim Roop from Los Angeles, Top 5, and what else? Well, a bunch of other, Brittany Watch and all of that crap. Ladies and gentlemen, now the most important part of your day. Let's now welcome...
Sure, thank you, Rick. I'm sure the audience may have more important things to do. I'm not sure. But
Bob, don't undersell yourself.
I do appreciate it. Thank you.
Bob, I don't wish for you to... you need to have an accurate sense of your own importance to this program and your self-worth, Bob. The audience waits with the most bated of breaths for you.
You always introduce me very nicely. I do appreciate that.
Well, it's part of our relationship, Bob. Hey, let me ask you this. The Republicans are, and I point this out to Lisa a lot, that the Republicans are very good at coming up with phrases and positioning things and sort of setting the context by which things are perceived by the public. And so when President Bush yesterday vetoed this war spending bill, and he used this phrase, "I will not set a date for failure." And so this, and I may have asked you this before, but George Bush keeps using this phrase that I'm either date for failure or I'm not going to use an artificial withdrawal date.
Yeah.
And really, by any sort of objective assessment, it really is kind of the opposite. It is the other way around, because really, the Democrats, for good or bad, are asking for a real withdrawal date and sort of an open-ended commitment, which is what we've got now. That sort of seems to be the artificial date, because it sort of looms out there. I mean, has anybody clarified when this administration would feel the job was done? Has anybody ever really said what would have to happen for the Bush administration to go, well, and I think we're finished here?
No, truthfully, Rick, and it's doubtful that we'll ever hear that kind of thing, because the president has continued to say he doesn't want to let the enemy know when the U.S. might be withdrawing, or, you know, when the U.S. feels it's probably good to withdraw if some end is in sight to all of this. They may tell us maybe some point down the road if you know, things start to go better in Washington. But the interesting thing is that as the Republicans go with the Democrats now to the White House to discuss what to do next with this Iraq War funding bill, some of the Republicans have been putting up the idea of putting benchmarks on the Iraqi government, and if those benchmarks aren't met, perhaps withholding non-military funding, some of the things that some of the social spending that the United States has been providing to Iraq's government. But no, you're not likely to hear anything anytime soon from the White House saying, well, we think we can, you know, we might start a withdrawal at this point or when this happens. The president has been very adamant about that, that's for sure.
Here's a dumb question. What kind of government does Iraq have right now? Because they have, if I'm not wrong about this, both a president and a prime minister.
Yes, and largely the power is in the prime minister. They have a parliamentary system, if you will, so the way other parliaments are. But, of course, being a member of parliament in Iraq can be very dangerous at times, as is being the prime minister, as is being a vice president in Iraq. They do have a number of officials, but by and large, it is a parliamentary system, and the parliament seems to be relatively strong the way I have ever observed it.
It seems like that country is in such a state of disarray, I can't even imagine how they would conduct an election.
Well, they have conducted elections, and that's one of those things that the administration likes to point to every once in a while, that they've gotten the democracy off of on its feet a little bit, but it continues to be a very, very dangerous place.
Yes.
And just an update on breaking news here for a moment.
Sure.
A few minutes ago, the House failed to override the president's veto. Not exactly a big breaking story there, but not exactly big news, if you will.
Do you suppose in some... I'm sorry, they're good.
But they have just finished that exercise, if you will.
Do you suppose in some sort of real politic kind of way that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, to begin with, are sort of... I won't say that they're happy the war is continuing, but I mean, since the war is going to be drug out regardless, that they're glad to see this this weird trench fighting between Congress and the White House because it just gives them more grist for the anti-Bush mill?
Well, this is playing itself out in some of the things that Republicans will say every once in a while. And I think it's important to look at it that way because even Republicans here on Capitol Hill realize that the longer this war continues, the more it hurts them. And it hurts the senators and all the Republican representatives who are going to be up for re-election in 2008, not to mention, of course, presidential candidates. But when Republicans start saying, well, we want some benchmarks on the Iraqi government, even though the Bush administration is relatively cool to that idea, then you realize that it is a bit of realpolitik for them as far as their re-elections are concerned. They do understand it, let alone, of course, the loss of life involved. But, they've put up a strong defense of the president today in this House override debate, saying that if we don't defeat the terrorists in Iraq, then al-Qaeda has a base from which to work. Even the president said this morning, interestingly enough, even those who may have disagreed with the war being started in the first place have to understand now that al-Qaeda has established itself there a bit, and this is the central front in the war on terrorism. That's what he continues to say.
All right. Thank you, sir. We will have speaks with you later on in the week. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon, my friend.
Talk to you tomorrow.
CNN thank Radio you. Correspondents from the Hill, Bob Costantini.
Got his fireworks that he gave me for
vodka. Oh,
and a car for some reason.
Thank you. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Speaking of, let's do this. Hi, Dan. Dan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
What's up?
All right. Well, I have some question about the Iraq war. We went over there in the first place to, kill Saddam and act like in place a different form of government, a democratic government of some sort, right?
I suppose that depends on who you ask, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, right. Quote unquote democratic government. Anyway, it seems like we've done that for the most part, but I mean that's about all we've done. And every other day it seems like. It's like the deadliest day of the war. You know, the numbers just keep going up.
Oh, no, you're right. No, every you're absolutely right about it. Every couple of weeks, you hear a news story that starts with, in the deadliest day of violence since the war began, X blah, blah, blah were killed today when blah, blah, blah. No, you're right. It doesn't seem to be getting any better. Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I mean, that's all I hear about on the news. And the other thing I hear about on the news is, the government squabbling over funds and people dying.
Yeah.
But what I'm confused about is, like, what are we doing over there? I mean, we did what we said we were going to do, but it didn't really work.
Yeah, you don't have to do a whole lot of convincing of me on that front. I mean, it's not like I got a better suggestion, but yeah, clearly it seems to be going poorly. I would agree with you on that. So, yeah.
Do you have any idea what these benchmarks are?
No, there are no. Well, see, there are no. In my opinion, there really are no benchmarks because, as I think, as Donald Sutherland said in JFK, you know, the government's authority over its citizens really rests in its war powers, and I think it's a whole lot more attractive to a government to have an open-ended sort of engagement that they can just kind of keep going forever. Let me put it this way. Like, what would you rather have at your job? At your job, would you rather have a finite series of things that they, you know, that you can do, or a finite series of acts that you could engage in that would result in your firing, or just sort of a general broad sense of what you got to do to keep your job? You probably want the general broad sense because it means that it's going to make it harder to fire you. So,
right.
You know, specifics is going to make it a lot easier to point out that the government is just effing up constantly, which they clearly are. So,
I like the war on drugs.
That's exactly what I'm saying, my friend. Although, keep in mind, I'm really an idiot and kind of don't know what I'm talking about. So,
I feel you there.
Thanks. Thanks for that. I appreciate it. God bless you, sir.
Okay, all bye. Right.
There you go. It's 503-733-2970 while we're...
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
By the way, I can hear the crunching of your pirate booty in the microphone. I'm sorry. Sarah is eating a snack food from Trader Joe's called pirate booty. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. I can hear your pirate booty in the microphone.
I forgot to turn it off.
As I was talking to Bob, I kept it in the background.
You could have told me.
Yeah, well. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick Emerson.
How can I help you, sir?
As someone who's just returned from the green zone, and I'm going to preface this with a question.
Oh, no.
Do you really care about what's going on?
Let me just say that I have no idea what your call is going to be about. Your call could be about Gilligan's Island, for all I know.
No. It's not about Gilligan's Island. It's about Baghdad. Oh, it's about Iraq.
Why did I take that last call?
It's real simple.
Go ahead.
I'll make this real simple. I'll use small words for you.
Yes, thanks. Thanks so much.
These people believes differently than we believe. It's real simple. If you don't believe what they believe, you must die. Period. That's all there is to it. People can't wrap their brain around.
Who are these people, sir?
Your Islamic fundamentalist terrorists between the ages of 17 and 45.
Okay, no disagreement for me. So, well, they're no better or worse than any other group of religious nutcases that think that they have the only direct line to God. You know, they all think every one of those groups, I mean, one invisible man in the sky is no better or worse than another, and they all think that if you're not in their club, that you're going to, you know, go to the place where the guy with the horns points you with a stick for the rest of your life. So, I mean, you know, what are you going to do?
Well, did you hear Christopher Hitchens' conversation?
I did, actually. Christopher Hitchens, who is like the smartest guy in history of the world. You want to talk about a guy who has an intellect like a threshing machine.
Yes, I shared a bottle of gin with him here a couple years
ago. That's a guy that I suspect could probably hold his liquor pretty well. So I don't mean to sound like a jerk about it, but I'm just saying, look, rednecks are rednecks. And just because, you know, and some rednecks come in cowboy hats and some rednecks come in turbans. You know what I mean?
Well, this is true, and particularly under the
guys who are
wonderful sun of Iraq, you can get a very redneck real fast.
That's what I'm saying. Guys who are terrified of women, freedom, and gays are rednecks. I don't care what color their skin is.
Well, I'll tell you what. You can believe what you want to believe and understand only what I just told you to be the gospel truth if you wish, or not at your peril.
Thank you.
But it will be coming to your doorstep if we tell them when we're leaving. They will not stop. If you know, we can leave Iraq. We can leave Afghanistan. We can pull out of the Middle East entirely.
Yeah, here's the thing.
Business with them.
And then I swear to God, we're never talking about this again. Here's the thing. They came to our doorstep when we were there before. We've been in the Middle East for decades. We were there before. We were there, and they came here.
Yes.
The reason they came here, according to Osama bin Laden, by the way, is because we're in Saudi Arabia.
Well,
I mean, I hate to, you know.
I'll tell you why.
Oh, this is my fault, and I kept it going.
Yeah,
Okay, I'll make this real quick.
Osama bin Laden
got PO'd by the crown prince who was running the intelligence in the country. When he offered to bring his 20,000 mujahideen in from Afghanistan.
It's my fault, I'm sorry.
To bring the 20,000 mujahideen in from Afghanistan to take care of the problem with Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And the crown prince said, no, we have an agreement with the United States. And that's what PO'd OBL.
Well, okay. I'll tell you what, friend. Let's just call it a day and move on to things of a more trivial nature.
Okay, well, I'm going back in 4 months. I'm going to kill a few more of those bastards. So, and know that you can sit here in your happy ignorance and know that that's the way life is.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Jesus.
And I kept my mouth shut.
No, and I tried so hard. I tried so hard to make it through that phone call. You know what I mean? All right. And it's not like whatever. And, you know, we have all kinds of respect for the military on the show, both as, I mean, maybe not as an organizational concept all the time, but certainly for the people who are members of the military. But you know what? There's certain tones of conversation that just don't go very far with me. And calling up the show and saying that you're going to use small words so I can understand it, and then ending with it. And here's the thing: can we please put a moratorium on the Rick? And because of people like me that you are allowed to issue your moronic, thoughtless opinion, just cram it, friend. Jesus, for the love of God, come and put a pitchfork in the back of my head. I don't even remember what I asked Scotty to come in here for.
I don't know, but it kills to hear the other side, doesn't it?
The other side of what?
Just other opinions.
I don't think I disagreed with the guy on anything.
All right.
I don't think there's anything. It has nothing to do with the content. I mean, look, it's not like you really have to call him and convince me that nutcase religious people are responsible for most of the problems in the world. I was kind of sold. I think everybody in this room was sold on that about 20 years ago in our own personal lives. I think as soon as I reached the age of reason, I kind of figured out that there wasn't that James Mason was not waiting in the sky with a book to punish me for, touching myself in an impure manner. So I don't really know that I disagree with the guy in anything, but, you know, just save the long, tedious lecture about how I only have this job because he's kept Al-Qaeda from coming to my house in Southeast Portland, because it's just retarded. Seriously. All right. Because if that were the case, they wouldn't, Al-Qaeda wouldn't have come here in the first place, because we were already in the Middle East. So, you know, when you call up, it's nice to have, what are those things called? Facts on your side. Why did I even have you come in here? I don't even remember, because I summoned you in, and now Dan, what is it with goddamn guys named Dan? People named Dan are the bane of my existence.
We need a Dan sounder.
Oh, he's just put me in a whole black place now.
Let's bring Scotty back in after the news arc, because I remember what we were going to talk
Scotty.
About.
Yes, Scotty.
Is it good?
Please leave.
Is it good?
I don't know. I don't even remember what it was about.
All right, later.
God almighty. Let's just quickly blow through these, then we'll break them. We'll have Tim Riley here. Hi, hello. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. This is Brandon, Virginia.
Really?
Yeah, I'm driving around to Virginia with a bottle of Vizo in my car.
God bless you, sir. See, that'll put a smile back in my face. Excellent.
Yeah,
thank you.
With a great Vizo sighting.
Okay.
I'm going to the airport. I got to come out here to Virginia. Going to go to a trade show.
Right.
And I see the Made in Oregon store has Vizo in at the airport.
Oh, this is at the airport. Absolutely.
Except you can't carry it. That's outside the security area. So I go through security, and there's the little market in there, and they also have Vizo in there. So I just stopped up, got on the plane, and here I'm in Virginia with a room full of Vizo.
Fantastic. No, it's, in fact, the last time I went to Salt Lake City, I forgot that you have to check all your liquids now. Port confiscated it from me. So now I go early, and if I go with my wife somewhere, I check it with her luggage, because they do have it at the Portland airport. And it is useful for taking to places like Salt Lake City, where you're not necessarily guaranteed a cup of coffee in every store.
So you don't even have to check it, though. You can buy it after you go through security.
Yeah, no, it's that's so. And the Made in Oregon store is after the security checkpoint?
No, that's before. But the market right past security also has Vizo on the shelf.
Excellent, because we do get people who ask that question because they're going to be traveling and they want to take it with them. So last time I went to California, it sucked because I didn't have any there. So excellent, thank you, sir.
Yeah, you're welcome.
God bless you, my friend. Enjoy Virginia.
I'll do my best. I'll be having a lot more fun when I get back and get to hear you every day.
Thank you. Have a chaw for me. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Okay, I'm moving on. Moving on. I'm emerging from the cloud. Now, let's take a break. Come back. Tim Riley around the corner with the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Later on, CNN Radio correspondent James Roop, Scotty J, the top five, and more. You don't go anywhere. So Rick Emerson Show is Aerosmith. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. Emerson Show live in Portland. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Is somebody really calling about the theme song to Two and a Half Men? Really? Well, okay. 503-733-2970 or 503-P-by-70. He's your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Jim Riley.
Hello, John Edwards. You know he's listening right now because he is here.
I didn't know that, really.
Right down the street from here. He's speaking at the ILWU Local Aid Union Hall, which is at 2435 Northwest Brent Avenue, and everyone's welcome to attend.
What is the ILWU, the International Labor Worker something?
Yeah. ILWU.
Okay. And where is that at?
2435 Northwest Brent Avenue, which is...
That's just down the street.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump from here.
Let's go down and say hello.
It's right around the corner, actually, almost.
Really?
It would be down that way.
We should send Scotty down to get his thoughts on things.
He's bringing his campaign to Portland today. He's holding a town hall meeting to discuss his plans for bold change for America, says his publicity people. So, everyone's invited to attend.
All right.
Oh, nobody knew about it.
Is it open to the public?
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, so it's not like a $40 to get in the door and $100 to shake his hand kind of a thing?
No.
All right. There's just no buzz about that guy, though.
No.
That's, I mean, even with, and I hate to sound cold, but even with all of that media attention he got about his wife's cancer, there's no one is talking about him because there's just no sizzle on that guy. And I have revised my statement. I mean, I really do believe that he gets a good shot of being president sometime, but it's not in 2008 and it's probably not in 2012. But I mean, the guy looks like he's about 12 years old anyway. So, I mean, at the rate that he appears to be aging, by which I mean not aging, I mean, he'll be able to run in 25 years. Doesn't matter. It's, this next election's all Hillary and Obama. Although, by the way, speaking of this next election, one of the interesting side effects, one of the interesting sort of ancillary results of this whole election cycle is that there's all of this Mormon stuff that's appearing in the media lately because of Mitt Romney from Massachusetts. He's the governor of Massachusetts. Yes. He's running for president. Maybe he probably won't make it. The reason he won't be elected, a lot of that is due to the fact that he is a Mormon, and Americans just find that religion too weird to vote for. But there's all of this Mormon stuff that's come out. Like, PBS is running this fascinating multi-part documentary on the rise of the Mormon faith in America, and it's all because of Mitt Romney. So you're going to be up to your eyeballs in Latter-day Saints for the next few months anyway.
Most of the interesting news today comes from the burbs.
Fantastic.
Up to St. Helens we go, which is the home of Scott Daly. A convicted rapist is running for the school board in St. Helens. Richard Matthews was convicted in 1999 of third-degree rape. He was a 26-year-old police officer at the time, and his victim was a young girl.
Jesus.
He told investigators that he had sexual contact about 50 times. It was never consensual.
He raped someone 50 times?
Probably not the same person.
Oh, okay.
He had sexual contact with this person, whatever that might be.
Okay. All right, and this is where? In St. Helens?
Yeah, it was Scott Daly lives, yeah.
I thought they were better than that in St. Helens. I thought that St. Helens was...
Maybe that's as good as it gets in St. Helens.
That was really... There's a limited pool of people from which to draw. Okay.
Well, he says he's owned up and taken responsibility for his actions, including 21 days.
21?
That's what it says. I thought it was years. It says days. 21 days in jail.
For 50 incidents of rape.
Mm-hmm.
There's something missing from the story.
Sexual contact, it says here.
I don't even know what that means.
And, let's see, he got sex offender treatment. I'm not a monster. I'm a guy who made a mistake.
I am not a monster.
I started a new life with a new wife and four kids in the school system, a new home, and I want to make a positive difference.
Why do stories like this always end with reformed, Jesus, wife, kids? Always. That's always how these guys... And so he was a cop, and he had 50...
Because marriage and kids make everything okay.
Yes, of course. That solves all your problems.
Yes, it does.
Never mind. I was going to make a cultural reference, but now his name is escaping me. Blah, 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 blah. All right, well, so he's running or has been elected to the school council?
He's running.
All right, well, okay, there you go. Move to St. Helens now, won't you please? We'll make that part of their marketing material for the big fall push.
Meanwhile, a veteran Hillsborough Elementary school teacher faces two felony counts for trying to sell a student's winter coat on eBay. Elizabeth Logan is a first-grade teacher at Jackson Elementary. She's been indicted on theft, virus, and computer crimes, both felonies.
I'm so cold. Where did my coat go?
Apparently, police got involved in the case in January after a Jackson Elementary mother reported finding her daughter's winter coat on eBay. The girl's coat had turned up missing at school, so her mom turned to the online auction site to replace it. The mom, who police won't identify, found the same coat. This is a Columbia Sportswear ski jacket. Online, and she noticed the seller and another bidder were also from Hillsboro. The mom suspected the coat was her daughter's and alerted the other bidder that she might be bidding on a stolen item. That bidder, apparently a friend of the seller, notified the seller about the mom's suspicion. Well, it turned out to be Logan, and she tried to rig the bids by telling her friend to outbid the mom. This is crazy. In another term, the coat was damaged by the seller's dog and curiously ended up on Jackson Playground.
How much could you possibly get for a first grader's Columbia sportswear coat anyway? Jesus. Especially one that's apparently being got at by the family hound.
Well, the teacher's salary is $68,000 a year.
Ugh. There's a whole bunch of people.
Well, those Columbia sportswear coats are expensive, but I think you can afford a new one for $68,000 a year.
Let me ask you, and where does she live? Is this Beaverton?
This is Hillsboro.
In Hillsboro. It's good to see crime happening in the suburbs, though. I think we should do this more often. This is like that shouting day or whatever it is that the Parliament has. We ought to have just the suburbs, the suburban hell day. There's nothing but tales of woe from the outlying areas.
I have more of them.
Let me ask you this before we move on about Columbia sportswear. Is that old woman that they use in the Columbia sportswear.
She's a real old woman.
Is she a real... She's not computer generated.
No.
No, she's
an actual grouchy old lady.
But, I mean, is she... she's a real old woman, but is she really affiliated with the company?
Yes.
Some manager? What
yes.
does she do? Who is
she's
she?
She's like the head of the company.
Is that true?
Yeah.
See, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm inherently suspicious, you know, because it's like... You know, like Betty Crocker and all of those and, you know, all of those... You know, those people are all made up. Those people. Betty Crocker and so forth. Because Betty Crocker isn't real. I think Little Debbie is real, though. I think we had this discussion a long time ago about Lil Debbie. And somebody clarified that Lil Debbie is, in fact, or was a real person. Probably dead by now. There's a real Little Debbie. There's a real Mrs. Fields. But I think everybody else is made up. But that woman is real. The Columbia... What is her name? Does she even have a name, or is it just like Mom?
I can't remember what her name is.
I think
she's been on billboards before.
And she has a lot of those, like, sort of tough love, mm-hmm. sort of like, this jacket is great. If you don't like it, I'll beat your ass. It's a whole, like, really, like, crouchy old lady. And she just sort of looks like she's big and stout and could throw a serious punch at you.
Probably could.
Speaking of corporate icons, really quickly, have you seen the latest, and this is not a joke, have you seen the latest revision that they've done to Uncle Ben?
The, no, I
Uncle Ben's rice?
Does he look more like Barack Obama?
No. Uncle Barack. No, he's, no, that's, if the political career doesn't fail, as a side note, if Barack Obama's political career doesn't come together for him, you know that that's a guy, even just no names, like, you get just like Steve Forbes, who doesn't need the money and who's like the least charismatic person on earth, and that guy, I think, makes like 40 large every time he does a speaking engagement somewhere. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine how much money Barack Obama would command as like a corporate spokesperson, like CBS? Like CBS would, you know, and now talking about, you know, and it would have some stupid slogan like, like grasping the gold, you know, with Barack Obama. This one-time corporate seminar will teach your sellers how to maximize their potential efficiency with, you know, it's a bunch of crap. And they would pay him like 80 grand to come and talk for like 40 minutes in just those glowing dulcet tones that he has. No, here's my thing. Uncle Ben's rice, it is no longer Uncle Ben. He's now just Ben. And I swear to God, this is true. You can go on Google News if you don't believe me. He is now just Ben, and he is the CEO of the company. And he's like, he's wearing like a three-piece suit, and he's standing in front of like a polished walnut desk. And it's very contemporary, and he like has a private helicopter or something. He's no longer, because I think Uncle Ben at one point was a chef, the character of Uncle Ben.
He had a chef's hat on.
Yeah, now he is just, no, you're thinking of, see, I don't think so. I think you're thinking of the cream of wheat guy.
Oh, that's Rastus.
Really?
Yeah,
is that his name? R-A-S-T-U-S?
I believe so, yes.
I didn't even know the cream of wheat guy had a name.
Yeah, they did a whole series on this on the media, on WNYC this week.
I'm going to write that down. You know, that's the sort of pop culture knowledge that can win me money on Jeopardy someday. This was the name of the popular cream of wheat chef.
And he, too, was a freed slave.
Is that true?
Yeah, all these guys were freed slaves.
The character had a backstory, and the backstory was that he was emancipated?
Yes.
Interesting. Well, yeah, so Uncle Ben is no longer Uncle. He's no longer a cook. He is now Ben, and he owns the company.
Well, he hadn't been promoted in about 100 years.
So he did have it coming, really. He'd been passed over enough. All right. We've got a definitive answer about this, I think. You have an answer about the Columbia sportswear lady.
Yeah, it's Margaret Boyle. And
Gert.
And yep, Gert. I think it's Gertrude. Her husband founded Columbia Sportswear, and he passed away. She inherited it, and now her son is the one who's also in the commercials that she tortures, making him wear all the coats. He's now the CEO, I believe.
She is pretty great, though. I mean, as corporate spokespeople go, there's just a certain... And it's weird because I'm assuming that she doesn't, you know, write her own copy. I'm assuming that it's done by an ad agency and then they just photograph her. But she does have a certain something. She photographs well. She has a certain presence.
She has a bio, One Tough Mama, I believe is what it's called.
Right on.
And she has that old World War II pull up the sleeve, flexing her bicep picture on the cover.
We've got a lot of emails that are saying Rick. She is associated with the company, and from what I've heard, she lives up to her nickname of One Tough Mother. That's fantastic. All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
No problem.
All right, there you go. One Tough Mother. I didn't realize that's sort of a double entendre kind of thing, too. Good for her. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, more suburban news. Also in Hillsboro, a 50-year-old man facing drunk driving charges after he crashed into a loaded school bus. This happened in Southwest Farmington and River Rose in Hillsboro. That's the area that Scotty lives in. Maureen Funk was stopped at a traffic sign behind a bus full of kids. Police said it was struck from behind by John Dobro. And the momentum pushed her car into the bus. She backed away and drove away, but officers caught up with him 2 miles away. Charged with hit-and-run assault, reckless driving under the influence. He also has a previous DUI charge. Funk was taken to St. Vincent's Hospital, non-life-threatening injuries. 25 children heading to Groner Elementary School.
Groner.
Or not.
That's fantastic. Who names things like this? I probably have dozens of times, and it's probably been asked, and then it just slid out of my brain like it was made out of Teflon. I probably asked where Boring Oregon came from. If I have, don't call again. I'll look it up someday. Groaning or Groner?
Groner.
Groner Elementary, and you know that was named after a guy named like Gus Groner or something.
One of the astronauts.
Exactly.
You're right about, I went to Uncle Ben's website. It says, welcome to my office at thenewunclebens.com. I'm so glad you've decided to join us. More than 2 billion people across the internet every day. Of course, 5 billion people eat rice every day, so this World Wide Web thing, while popular, still has quite a ways to go. I would be honored if you made yourself at home. Look around, explore, and simply familiarize yourself with the world of Uncle Ben's rice.
Really, how big could the world of rice...
He has a nice office.
Well, he's the owner of the company.
Oh, yep. Join Ben's Club.
Really?
That's what it says here.
What do you suppose the benefits are of joining Uncle Ben's... Ben's Club?
Receive tips, valuable coupons, track your favorite recipes, and more.
All right. I just can't fathom how big the world of Ben's rice... See, and now this is totally going to be a benchmark. That in 30 years, you will be able to spot old people, and I will be one of them. I'll be 64 years old, and I'll be calling him Uncle Ben. And then, and younger people will look at me, and they will roll their eyes in disgust. Okay, now I'm looking in Wikipedia here. This really is fascinating to me, because I never knew that there was a backstory to some of these fictitious characters. Like, I wonder if Betty Crocker has a backstory. Like, I wonder if she's based on somebody. Because, like, Barbie, the Barbie doll, kind of a different thing, but Barbie was based on a real person. I think she was named after the creator's daughter, for one thing. Apparently, in years past in the American South, it says here, Whitey commonly referred to elderly black men as uncle, though they were not blood relations. This practice was considered patronizing and demeaning as it was discontinued. So I guess that's kind of how, like, white men were called, old white men were called Colonel, like Colonel Sanders, because he, of course, not a real Colonel. But a Colonel was just sort of like Colonel Parker, Elvis's manager. In March 2007, at 61 years, now Uncle Ben was not a chef, Tim Riley. He was a servant/maitre d/farmer. Uncle Ben was promoted to the boardroom in a new advertising campaign designed to divorce itself from the stereotypical nature of its icon. Company marketing announced that Uncle Ben was the chairman of the board.
Yes.
A visit to the company website reveals a set of impressive double doors. The plaque on the wall reads, Chairman. Mm-hmm. The doors open to reveal an appropriately decorated executive office overlaid with a welcome message that says, Hello, I'm Uncle Ben. The nameplate on the wall says chairman, blah, blah, blah. Apparently it's interactive. You know, corporate websites like that are really puzzling to me. Not just like the Ben... Yeah, I understand they give up. The Uncle Ben's Rice one. But just like that, like I remember the early days of the web. And I don't know if you recall this. When everybody was just so... Not that... The web has really just become an everyday part of life now. And you don't really think about it a whole lot. It's just become another tool, another form of the media. But do you remember in the early days when everybody was just internet crazy? Everybody was just nutty for it. And you would see literally... like Velveeta.com, and you would go there, and clearly somebody had told the Velveeta people they just had to have a web presence for, like, no readily discernible reason. And you would go there, and it would just be a big, like, the Velveeta logo, and you would click on it, and, like, animated penguins would come out and sing, and then that was the end. And, like, site done, finish, over. That was all you would use it for.
Well, you can take a virtual tour of Uncle Ben's office.
Really?
It's pretty cool.
Does he have exciting gigaws with which to amuse yourself?
He has boxes of Uncle Ben's rice through the years over what looked like law books, and it looks like he's a Mac user.
Really?
Yeah, looks like a Mac.
Part of the new Swap.
G5.
The new nerd.
He plays chess, and there are several bow ties hanging up in a picture frame on his wall. I guess his bow ties through the years.
Does he wear a bow tie now?
Well, they don't have a current picture of him, unfortunately, so he must be out of the office.
I'm sorry. Ben is gone. Please leave your message. Your message is very important. He's on the golf course. Let's see here. Penelope, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
It's Penelope.
I know it's Penelope. I'm being kooky. I used to have a friend of mine who was a grown man. He was like 30 years of age, and he pronounced it Penelope. So.
I see.
What's up?
Well, you know, I was listening while painting and got kind of hung up on the St. Helens copper.
Yes, the St. Helens man who apparently had 50 different incidents of inappropriate sexual conduct but will now be shaping the lives of young people at a school.
Well, I think that's just fabulous. Fabulous. I wonder if our tax dollars help contribute to his rehabilitation process and whatnot. I actually called because I have some personal insight on people who commit sex crimes and are, quote-unquote, rehabilitated.
This sounds like it's about to be awkward. Go ahead.
Not at all, because I'm fine with it.
Okay.
My biological father is serving many, many years in a federal penitentiary down in New Jersey because of their rehabilitation program for people who commit sex crimes.
And so was he not fully rehabilitated?
Well, he started out here in good old Sheridan, and such a upstanding prison inmate that they decided he was worthy of being shipped over to the East Coast for this rehabilitation program. So
right.
He's out in another 10 years, give or take. And his crimes were computer, you know, against children.
Right.
Many, many... He's got Federal and Measure 11. He's, you know, screwed, blued, and dead as far as I'm concerned.
So when he's rehabilitated now, is that like a government, program you go through, or do they bring in private agencies to do that?
It is both, actually. It's a government program, so he and other wackos get to sit around and talk about why they did what they did.
I don't mean to interrupt. I was just going to ask you, I always wonder, and this is probably not the appropriate place to talk about it, but I always do wonder exactly what a rehabilitation program, because I have a friend of mine, it's a similar situation. I have a friend of mine whose dad is in a federal prison for the same thing, for, taking it out on the kids in a couple different ways. And I always wonder what those rehabilitation programs consist of, because, like, really, honestly, sincerely, if you're like a 40-year-old guy and you have to be told not to be having sex with 7-year-olds, it doesn't really, like, what is it you can possibly tell someone that will, like
them?
Yeah, like really, like what would you, I'm not trying to be flip about this, what could you possibly sit them down and tell them that they wouldn't already have known, you know, like the way that all of us just sort of instinctively know it? The whole thing is just mystifying to me.
Well, and that's, you know, I think that's when we talk about, you know, sending our troops over to Iraq and all the money that we're spending on that and all of the, you know, when we have all of these, regurgitated crimes, and we've got this douche who's, you know, running for, you know, the in St. Helens, and God forbid.
Tim, I think you've got your headline for this afternoon's news. Douche runs for school board.
I can see the campaign signs now.
Vote for douche.
Well, I just, you know, I don't understand. Yeah. I do not understand, you know, the guy who called you earlier and got you in a funk, you know, or the army guy or whatever he is, you know. I mean, God love him, but at the same time, it's like, you know, if we took care of our own backyard and took care of these people who committed these crimes and, you know, exerted as much attention on that situation, and instead of trying to rehabilitate, which is BS, as any logical thinking person, you know, knows, you cannot rehabilitate these people.
It's not doable.
It's not possible. So, anyway, that was it. It was like a sliver under my fingernail. I wanted to get it out. So, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks for bringing a ray of sunshine into my day. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. I'm sure he's got a, you know, he's in with a big dude named Bubba. So, you know.
Thank you, Penelope.
All right, goodbye.
All right, there you go. This just in, douche runs for school board. And then we'll get like a little da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da thing underneath it. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Don't Scott Dally's children go to that school?
Yeah, well, Scott Dally was the one who found out that...
I thought he was the campaign manager.
Scott Dally is not the campaign manager for the molesty guy. Or whatever his crime... I'm sorry, not molesting. What were his crimes? Inappropriate sexual conduct?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a cop? Did he do this under the color of law? In other words, did he say, like,
I don't have
here's a badge, I'll need to touch you now.
I don't have details on what happened.
All right. What was I going to say? Oh, no, but Scott, remember we did that sex offender map? To find out sex offenders that live in York, these are the people in your neighborhood?
It's like those dots bury the whole city of Vancouver.
Totally.
It's
just one big splotch of red. Well, Scott Dally, there was one like two doors down from him. And it was actually two doors down the direction his kid walks to school. So they go a different way now. All right, here's Tim Riley.
So vandalism over the weekend was cause for alarm at the junior high school in Lake Oswego. Bomb 430 was written in paint at the Waluga Junior High School building. Investigators said one adult and a small group of juveniles gathered at the school Friday night. They allegedly used paintballs to vandalize the school and used the resulting paint to raise a threat. They have arrested 18-year-old James Gray for reckless burning, providing alcohol to kids, and criminal mischief. Then a Horizon flight from Seattle to Tacoma, actually it turned out to be a fright, was delayed after a passenger found a shotgun shell and a bullet aboard the plane. The pilot was ordering everyone off the plane to be screened through security. You think they would do that the first time they went by there. And this just in, a bill giving Oregon's gays and lesbians the benefit of marriage won final approval today in the Oregon legislature. Now it goes to the governor for his signature.
And he will sign it, by the way.
He will sign it.
So, in your face.
And that already happened in New Hampshire last week.
All right. And New Hampshire, and I was saying this the last time we talked about this, that I thought that Oregon would have done this a long time ago. And this is the... Now, I know I've asked this before. Is this the equal protection under the law, like in terms of employment?
That was the other one. That was passed already.
Okay, so that's already passed. So this is the marriage or the civil union thing?
This is the
domestic partnership thing. So you can give
it. So they changed the name of it and everyone okayed it. They took the word marriage out of it.
Does this also apply to cohabitating heterosexual couples?
I would imagine so.
Well, because, you know,
let's see.
When Laura and I just lived together, Laura and I were registered as domestic partners before we got married, because, you know, it took us a long, long time to get to the point of being married, and, you know, and again, not to diminish, you know, me or her, the marriage or whatever, but as I said before, one of the real reasons we got married, a big part of it, was that Oregon's domestic partnership didn't really do a whole lot for us.
No, it was just a name on a piece of paper.
That's totally what it was. I mean, it was just, and I remember taking it into at the company we worked for at the time, taking it in to the HR person, being like, hey, so, you know, my girlfriend at the time, my girlfriend and I are domestic partners, so can we sign up for something for this company stuff now? And she just kind of went, no. Which was ridiculous. I mean, and I realized that, I mean, sociologically, I'm like late to the party, that there's any number of people who were dealing for that for a long time. And of course, you know, first time I'd experienced it. And it
varied from company to company.
I don't want to say, I mean, it was like one of those black like me moments. You know what I mean? Where for just a moment, I'm like, well, what do you mean I can't get these benefits? Well, you're not married. And I said, well, Yes, but we live together, and we've been together for a long time, and we're in a committed relationship, and we're domestic partners, can't we? And they just said, no, get out. And it was at that moment, and whatever. I'm just saying, at that moment, it sort of was brought into stark relief, and we have the ability to get married and to solve a lot of those problems, which kind of came in the wake of Terri Schiavo, which kind of scared the hell out of both of us, because she's got nutcase religious parents. So that was kind of a creepy moment, though. I remember sitting in the HR woman's office with the domestic partnership form and being told that it wasn't enough. So, yeah, well, so screw that. So anyway, well done. And so the governor's going to sign that.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right, small piece of good news. Apparently, Penelope's dad is still a molesting douche, but what are you going to do? You take victories where you can get them. It's 503.
Unless he admits it. Yeah, these politicians don't. I mean, he could possibly be the only one. He's the one who admits this.
It's so true.
All the better. Nothing will be found out afterwards, will it? There are no skeletons in the closet. The closet has been opened. The skeletons hopped out.
Oh, good God almighty.
All these people in Washington, they're all molesting douches, wouldn't you say? A good number of them anyway.
They really know it's true. I can't really disagree with that.
In both parties. It's not limited to Republicans or Democrats. It's bipartisan.
Are you of the Washington douches? I never get tired of variations on that joke. No, I don't know that I've ever really heard it boiled down into such a concise assessment, but that really is hard to disagree with. I'm going to put that. We had to create some page somewhere. I can't do this because it would seem egocentric, but perhaps on the Rick Emerson Show, there's now several different Wikipedia entries for us. There's Sarah has one. You have one, Tim. I have a Wikipedia entry. And then there is also a Wikipedia page for the show, which is separate from all of ours. We all have our own person, and I haven't created
really?
Any. Yeah, because it's bad form to create your own Wikipedia, although I have people, I know people who I suspect have done it,
really?
Have created their own. Oh, I have a few people I know who I suspect have created their own Wikipedia.
Well, God bless Seamus.
Seamus made yours.
Mm-hmm.
That guy, oh,
who
God.
Who made the Rick Emerson Show one?
Oh, no, I feel like an ass. What is his name? It's the guy who listened to us while he was overseas at the London School of Economics, and he gave us the copies of The Sun. Oh, I'm sorry. I feel like such a jerk. I can't remember his name now. I apologize. It was like Tad or Thad or Thor or something. Anyway, but we all have our own entries, and then there's one for the show. It's bad form, again, to add to your own Wikipedia, but there really ought to be one that just lists catchphrases or sayings or famous quotes from this program, because we've got so many of them. That ought to be one. Everybody in Washington is a molesting douche. Fantastic. 503-733-2970. Take a break. Back after this with more of Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. It's 503-P-by-70 or 503-733-2970. Stay right there.
Good golly, Miss Molly.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. Later on, we have a CNN radio correspondent, James Roop. Somebody sent me this trend. Apparently, if you go to the Uncle Ben's website, you can engage in conversation with Uncle Ben. It's like some poorly programmed artificial intelligence thing. He sent me an entire transcript of his, and it's not even as interesting as the Burger King chicken deal. The entire transcript of his conversation with Uncle Ben. Fantastic. All right, ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, here's Tim Riley.
All right, so let's get back to what's going on in Washington, D.C., shall we, with the
molesting douches.
Yes, the Bush Watch.
He's the president in residence. He's kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my Bush. Life is hard, that's a price of fame. When you're president, everyone knows your name.
Hey, what's that thing?
It's my Bush. I can't believe he's actually in the White House. That's our realm. That's my Bush.
The president. enemy calls Iraq the most visible and vital front in the broader struggle against terrorism. Speaking to a convention of contractors in the nation's capital, the president defended his veto of that Democratic war spending bill that contained timelines for withdrawal of U.S. troops in Iraq.
The Democrat leaders in Congress have chosen this time to try to force a precipitous withdrawal. It didn't make any sense to me to impose the will of politicians over the recommendations of our military commanders in the field. So I vetoed the bill.
He's right. Really not sure what happened there.
He's really
hitting this up a couple times and trying to figure out exactly what happened.
He's not sure what he's saying. He doesn't really know the notion of the story that he's conveying.
He doesn't know what veto means.
No.
Veto? Isn't he on The Sopranos?
And I'll we're going to override this veto. yes. No, what I was going to say is you can always tell the portions of his speech that are pre-scripted and then the portions where he's freestyling, because he suddenly starts to sound dumb. It's like his brain has slipped out of third gear and back into neutral. If you play that back again and he'll say, blah, 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 precipitous, and that part you can tell he's reading off the page.
Well, that's a hard word.
And then as soon as his eyes come off the page, you can hear his speech start to get a little wobbly, like he didn't know where he's going. Just play it in the first.
The Democrat leaders in Congress have chosen this time to try to force a precipitous withdrawal. It didn't make any sense to me to impose the will
See,
of
then
politicians
the speech gets all halting.
Over the
all
right. recommendations of our military commanders in the field.
Yeah.
So I vetoed the bill.
Yeah, he starts to insert a lot of pauses, and there's a lot of, and he just gets all wobbly as he's stringing the words together.
So Tony Snow said the move is necessary to, or is a necessary step that should lead to legislation that will work.
There will be a vote on the House of Representatives, the veto will be sustained, and the Democrats and Republicans on both houses are going to make their way to the White House, and we're going to begin talking.
I love conflict.
We must be protected from terrorists.
Whatever political points people may want to score, the ultimate thing is how do you keep the American people safe? And one of the most vital things to do is to win in the central front of the war on terror. And to do that, you have to provide the funding and flexibility necessary for our forces.
I'm so glad we're winning in the central front of the war on terror,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, since they all came from Saudi Arabia. Am I the only one? Are we the only show that sits and gets irritated about the? I don't know why Saudi Arabia bothers me so much.
Well, people think Saudi Arabia is part of Iraq.
Saudi Arabia just irritates me. Just the continued existence of whole sections of that country just annoy me on a daily basis. It's like I get up and I just sort of think about the fact that certain factions in Saudi Arabia continue to breathe, and it just bothers me to know, and especially since that's where the majority of the 9/11 hijackers came from.
Yeah.
Never mind. Don't worry about it. I'll just do as I'm told.
The president will not compromise.
It appears that the discussion about compromise is all the White House needs to compromise. It's never asked what the Hill's going to do. Fortunately, when there are talks today, I think both sides are going to be working in the spirit of trying to get something constructive done.
Yeah, all right.
Meanwhile, the president and the first lady took time out of their busy schedule to make an appearance last night on American Idol.
Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, the commander-in-chief even managed to slide in a joke about his dancing alongside a group of African-American musicians recently.
No!
We thank all the American Idol viewers who have shown the good heart of America. We thank all the celebrities who participated, including Bono, and all the contestants who sang their hearts out for these children. Say, Laura, you think I ought to sing something?
I don't know, darling. They've already seen you dance.
I hate myself and I want to die. I hate us for playing that. I hate it for existing. I hate everything about that clip. I hate everything about that show. Oh God, that just makes
me like an Ozzy and Harriet type of thing.
I feel like I'm covered in beetles right now. I feel my skin is crawling off of my body. I cannot believe that the president of the United States. It's not like we don't have problems to fix. I mean. Shouldn't he be? I mean, look, can't he at least be clearing brush somewhere? Isn't that what he does when he's not busy fighting a war? Doesn't he go?
There's only so much brush in Texas. It's dirt.
I think somebody else is making that observation. I think it might have actually been Dennis Miller, who's typically real bullish on the president. But I think he was making that observation. Like, how much brush can there possibly be in Crawford? Seriously. Hasn't he cleaned all the brush by now?
Right. It used to be part of Mexico. That's how you know it's a land nobody wanted.
That's what the Mormons thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Mormons. Let's just take this land in northern Mexico. Clearly, nobody wants this.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, God Almighty. Well, I mean, look, you got to give it to him. You got to give it to the American Idol guys for having that kind of pull. I mean, it is proof, by the way, and they always point this out whenever there's a huge American Idol vote. They always say, you know, more people voted for American Idol this week than vote in most presidential elections, and you do have to give it to American Idol. They are, in a very real way, more important to this country than presidential elections or, in fact, than the presidency.
And Dancing with the Stars.
Or, yes, yeah, that's true. So,
one-legged person's gonna go in front of the audience this month.
I don't know why that clip horrifies me so much, but it just does. The notion of George. I guess it's because maybe at heart, as much as we make fun of the presidency and politicians because they're molesting douches, mm-hmm. I guess at heart, part of me is like an idealist. You know, and I like to think that maybe this country in some way sort of runs the way it was intended to run. And just the idea that the president and the first lady have to just debase themselves by going and doing some bad phoned-in comedy bit for Simon Cowell is just depressing beyond my ability to express it. So, just speaking of, by the way, and it was George Bush making fun of his, hey, Laura, do you think I had to dance? No, that's Mike Clinton. But whatever, you know. Did you see that hideous picture last week of George W. Bush, I swear to God, pounding on like a bongo drum?
No.
Did you see that?
Was it for, like, Kwanzaa?
It was not for Kwanzaa, but I'm trying to remember the occasion now. It was George...
He probably dropped rice on somebody else.
to celebrate dropping ovens on a country somewhere. I am fairly sure... I don't want to say now, because if I get this wrong, it's going to sound terrible. If I get this wrong, I'll get it wrong in some horrible way. But there was some occasion... And I do not know whether it was in this country or whether George Bush was visiting another nation. But there was this shot, and it was on Drudge. It was a shot of George W. Bush, the lone white man in the photo. And I got to tell you, if you didn't think that George W. Bush could look whiter than he normally does and just seem more relentlessly Caucasian than he does most of the time, it was George W. Bush, the lone white man in a photo. And he is there, and he is surrounded by a ring of black men. And George W. Bush, I swear to God, is in the middle of the photo with, like, a drum put between his legs as though he's getting ready to go hang out in Washington Park with a drum between his legs, and he's got just the lamest look on his face, and he's clearly playing the drum. George W. Bush, your president, taking part in an improv, an ad hoc drum circle somewhere. I'll find the photo and point it out to you. It's one of the worst things ever. So forth. I don't even know what this means. Here, I'm going to read you now. I'm going to read you now what this call description is. This is Scotty's description of Scotty, who, by the way, has begun to rebel against the phrase call screener.
Oh, boy.
The title call screener apparently chafes on him now. This is how he has screened this call. The software, it shows the person's name, what line they're on, how long they've been waiting, and then other incidental information. Charlie Pants named Cipher. That's what it says. Charlie Pants named Cipher. It's like he's sending me part of the Enigma code or something. Charlie Pants named Cipher. What the hell does that even mean? All right, I got to... hello, sir. Charlie Pants named Cipher.
For some reason, I knew you were talking about my call.
What? I don't even understand what that means. Does that bear any relation to what you were calling about?
Well, Joey Pants,
Joe Pantoliano.
His name's Cipher on The Matrix.
Ah, it doesn't help, by the way, that Scotty spelled Cipher Cypher.
And then my other question is, whatever happened to him in that movie? Did he just die because he was eating a steak and then you never saw him again?
Is that true? Did you not see him killed?
I don't remember.
I don't know. I haven't seen the first Matrix in a couple years, and I never saw the third one. And I don't remember much about the second one, except for the car
chase. Well, the first one's the best one.
Yeah.
I love you guys.
Thank you. Okay. I don't really know the... I don't really know the answer to that. Joe Pantoliano, I don't know what happened to him in the Matrix, but yeah, his name was... Cypher? Cypher? No. Charlie Pants named Cypher. All right. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
So I had the story yesterday. Let's revisit it again. Yesterday, unconfirmed media reports claimed that the leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, the brand new one, was killed. Well, now they're denying this occurred. The initial report said Abu Ayyub al-Masari, also known as Abu Hamza al-Masari, was killed, but no officials have seen his dead body. He may have lost his life in some sort of crash in North Baghdad, but nobody really knows about that either.
There is preliminary reports that he was killed probably yesterday in the Tajik area in a battle involving a couple of insurgent groups and possibly some tribal people who have been having problems with Al-Qaeda.
Wait, so are we unclear about whether he's dead, or yeah, are we unclear about whether he died yesterday?
We're unclear whether he's dead.
How is it?
And it came back to us as unconfirmed media reports, which they were yesterday. We told you we didn't know if it was a lie or not, but we read it like everybody else.
Wasn't this the story yesterday that had, there was no author,
right,
it was undated,
yes,
it was unsourced,
mm-hmm,
there was no byline to it whatsoever. No. It was really just like, it was really like somebody had just slipped it under the door, like late at night at the Watergate, like, you know, put it underneath the red flower pot. Here you go. All right.
News for the working people.
Well, it's what we do. And I would like to know, by the way, if you would like completely unsourced and completely baseless, ill-founded news passed along, this is the show for you.
Mm-hmm.
This really is the place to send that.
At least we admit it.
It's true. We do. We have no problem running what tabloid journalists used to call blind items. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, you were wondering aloud how Joey Pantoliano died in The Matrix.
Or even if he did, I can't even remember what his fate in that movie is.
He did. So at one point, they're all inside, you know, Keanu and everybody's all inside The Matrix. And
yeah,
he starts killing them off one by one by pulling that plug out.
Yeah, yeah.
And after as he's doing that, just as he's about to kill Carrie Ann Moss, he sees that one of the dudes on the ship he thought he'd killed already had, like, done the Hollywood come back to life thing, and
totally,
I think shoots him with a machine gun or something along those lines.
Okay.
So he basically just dies on the ship while he's trying to betray them.
Okay, so Pantoliano gets gunned down somehow.
He does, yeah. So he didn't return for the other movies because he was machine gunned to pieces.
Cool, all right. Thank you, sir.
No problem, thank
all right,
you.
There you go. Fantastic. About George Bush drumming. He says there's a video of George Bush playing this drum. I saw it last night. It's entertaining. Signed, A Glorious Bastard. Fantastic. Well, I'll have to look for it then. Right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, Robert Kennedy Jr. is claiming Karl Rove did more than just spew a few harsh words at Sheryl Crow and Laurie David. New Yorker magazine reports Kennedy saw Rove literally spit at Crow and David at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Kennedy said the Republican strategist Rove was, quote, as rude and arrogant as a person can be.
That's surprising.
He added it was very, very strange to watch and a sad thing to think the government is run by somebody like that. Meanwhile, we don't discuss these people very often, but it's almost over with. Anna Nicole Smith's infant daughter is back in the U.S. for the first time. Daniel Lim was brought to Louisville, Kentucky yesterday by her biological father, Larry Burkhead, who said the baby ate, slept, played, and ate again.
Who knows what's next? We're just here to relax and horse around, if you will.
What's next is a diaper change. Burkhead said coming back to Kentucky is very special for him.
That's where I got my start as a photographer and journalist, and at Kentucky, of course, is where I'm from in the Derby. And,
he doesn't look like he's
really
from Kentucky.
Home. It's kind of full circle. It's also where I met Anna Nicole.
He looks a little too pretty to be from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, somebody has sent me this clip of George Bush playing a drum. Hold on a second. Let me
just... Best video of the day.
Kind of a combination.
This is from CNN, by the way. This is...
I don't know.
I can't even talk.
Oh, my God. Almighty in heaven.
Oh, you hadn't seen the video of him dancing?
No. Have you?
Uh-huh.
Tim,
have you seen this?
I have not. Okay, you have to come here. You have to come look at this. You have to walk over and see this. This is... Malaria awareness. Oh, this is the malaria thing we were talking about. Okay, no, this is unaltered. This is a CNN clip of George W. Bush. Where is he at? Oh, he's in the Rose Garden, but he is surrounded by, this is from CNN, malarians. People from the God-fearing country of malaria. President Bush, the malarian people welcome you.
With, probably what he was told.
With open, I gotta go meet with some malarians. I wish I could do George Bush. Okay, so here's the clip.
Best video of the day.
Oh my God.
It's kind of a combination, I don't know.
And now he's pounding the drum and he's doing this weird, it's like he's doing the Froog or something.
I don't think he needs an outlet.
Told this is being shot for Soul Train.
he's gonna audition to be one of the Solid Gold dancers.
Very stressful at the White House.
It looks like the guy playing him on the Tonight Show.
There's no words for this. I can't. Oh God! And then he's doing the wave. He's doing the wave now. Okay, I gotta post that there because there's no way I can describe it. That is as horrifying as the still photo of him playing the drum was. This is just indescribable. Okay. Well, never mind. I'm not even going to talk about it anymore because there's no way that my words can do justice to it.
Well, they probably gave him a map of Africa and said, find malaria.
Jesus. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I wanted to give you a heads up on something. Are you aware of a theater called Cinema 21?
I am aware of Cinema 21. We have a couple of listeners who work there, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not sure if you know about it or not, and I just got the newsletter late, but apparently tonight and tomorrow are the last days for a movie called Air Guitar Nation.
Air Guitar Nation. We talked real briefly a couple weeks ago. Scotty hooked us up with the director of Air Guitar Nation. I forget her name, some chick, and we talked to her a couple weeks ago. Air Guitar Nation, which is about the National Air Guitar Championships.
Yeah,
it is playing this week at Cinema 21. I haven't gone to see it. I saw the poster for it. I'm sorry?
To air is human, to guitar divine.
Is that really what the tagline is?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Finally, it's playing for 2 months.
You know, after that, do you know what's replacing Air Guitar Nation at Cinema 21, my friend?
Killer of Sheep.
Oh, yeah,
really?
Killer of Sheep.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Do you know what's replacing Killer of Sheep?
Zoo.
Who knows what Zoo is? Okay, let me tell you. Yeah. Have you ever heard Tom Likas take someone out Enumclaw style?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Enumclaw style refers to a man named Kenneth Pinion, who died. There's a guy named Kenneth Pinion. This is, by the way, the single most viewed story in the history of the Seattle Times website. If you go to seattletimes.com, this is the single most viewed story in the history of the newspaper. There was a guy in 2003, I think it was, or 2004, a guy named Kenneth Pinion in Enumclaw, who died, I'm speaking now as a journalist inside the news segment of this program. He died of a perforated colon after having adult relations with a stallion. And apparently he'd been doing this for some time. He was also a Boeing employee who had a high-level security clearance with the federal government, so it was all very awkward. They tried to prosecute him. Apparently, the guy who was with him, he had a partner there who was filming the whole thing. They tried to prosecute him. It became all a little sticky because they found out that bestiality was not illegal in Washington. Anyway, Zoo is a documentary of the life and untimely, icky death of Kenneth Pinion. It played at Sundance, got rave reviews, and it's going to be at Cinema 21 in a couple weeks. So my wife preemptively informed me that she will not be seeing that one. So it's be Clyde and I again. Yes?
Also, later in June, there's going to be a Buffy the Vampire sing-along.
I'm sorry, I can't believe I just did that with my lips. When a sing-along, you mean of the musical episode?
Yeah, they're going to be re-airing that, but it's going to be interactive with the crowd.
Oh, they're trying to create like another Rocky Horror Picture Show thing.
Probably.
Yeah, that Buffy the Vampire Slayer musical episode, which is called Once More with Feeling, that is one of the greatest hours of television of the last 10, 15 years. It really is fantastic.
And if I can just borrow one more minute of your time, there's a movie that I saw earlier this week that I thought you might enjoy, Rick.
Yes.
It's called 13.
What is 13?
Are you talking about the girl, the movie about the young girls?
Oh, yeah, 13, with the girls who were sluts.
Yeah, they're doing lesbian action, and then they are huffing, and then one of them's also a cutter.
And it's got Barbara Hershey, or who is now? Who's that girl? Is it Barbara Hershey, the mom? Yeah, I know you. I know you're talking about
it, but I don't think it's Barbara Hershey. I can't remember her name. Though.
Yeah,
she's like the only famous person in the whole movie.
Yeah, my wife has got that on DVD. She's a big fan of that movie. Apparently, it's about a bunch of slutty, out of control 13-year-old girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty good, though.
Excellent.
It's a little disturbing in certain parts, but it's pretty good.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, here you go. That Buffy the Vampire Slayer musical is great. I can sing whole sections of it. I will not do
that. One special episode?
Yeah, where Buffy...
I love that episode.
Going through the motions, losing all my drive.
There's a car on fire, I-405 northbound at 4th. The air is blocked by the car fire.
Where?
This is... I-405 northbound at 4th.
All right, so go by and stare
at that. Drive really slow.
Drive really slowly. Maybe just take the kids and a lunch and make a whole day of it.
Mm-hmm.
So stop and stare at that. All right, here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, let's talk about Spider-Man the 3rd, shall we?
It is off to more than a great start worldwide. The music and movie, which debuted in 8 Asian markets yesterday, raked in 415 million yen, or $3.5 million. It's the biggest Tuesday opening ever. Sony Pictures said the premiere was bigger than Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 everywhere. It also made $3.4 million in South Korea and $960,000 in Hong Kong, and set opening day records everywhere in Singapore, the Philippines, Malaysia, and Thailand. It also debuts in 8 European markets. It stars Tobey Maguire and Kristen Dunst. Meanwhile, Sam Raimi, who directed this motion picture, was asked if there were still things about the film he would like to tweak if he had enough time to do so.
This picture was so big, and I didn't really have time to finish it in all the ways that I wanted to. I would love the opportunity to go back in.
So it's not finished.
More. I'm not sure that I'm allowed to, because when you show the movie in the theater, they want to pretty much do the DVD of what was there. Maybe at a later date, they'll allow you to go back and finish things.
So the Asians are watching an unfinished motion picture.
That's kind of depressing, actually, when you think that a guy of Sam Raimi's stature, who's created two blockbuster films and also many, many well-regarded sort of cult films like Evil Dead, and I think he did A Simple Plan as well, that, you know, he doesn't have a free... You would think at this point he's earned the right to have a free hand to just make exactly the movie he wants to make, but it's kind of depressing that he's that successful and the studio is still kind of bossing him around. And plus, I hear the movie sucks to begin with. I mean, that's the thing. I think
the second half just sucks.
I heard that it just goes on and on forever, and
there's too much character development.
Too much. I demand less character. I demand more things that go bing. And there's like 100 different villains and whatever. I mean, it's kind of critic proof. I mean, everybody will see it. I mean, all the fanboys will see it, and I'll probably see it too. But it is
nothing else out there.
No, and the thing is, it will benefit from having, it's a franchise. It's got a built-in marketplace. It comes on the heels of a really, really fantastic Spider-Man 2. And as you said, there's just nothing else there.
There's not a dancing penguin found anywhere at this moment.
Goddamn, though, did I see this? Man. Every time I think that I have run out of reasons to be glad I don't have children, it's like God gives me another one. So I'm sitting there when Laura and I went to see Grindhouse. We go to see Grindhouse at Century 16, and there's a trailer for, I don't remember what it's called now. Oh, it's called Surf's Up, and it's yet another, and this has become its own genre. CGI creatures in a far-flung section of the world who dress like little hipsters and sing a lot. And I think that that's got to be like, there's sort of these weird, like, fourth and fifth tier, like, Pixar-type films. And I think these are like, penguins or something, but they live in the Caribbean and they all have sunglasses and they do little,
mess with a penguin.
No, they do all these jigs on top of surfboards. It just seems like the worst thing ever. And you see that and you're just so glad that you haven't reproduced, because you know that you won't have to see that. Let's do one more, and then we will break here, because we're beyond late.
Well, let's have a Spider-Man clip. In this scene, Spider-Man, played by Tobey Maguire, confronts the Flint Marco, who's a sandman who lives in the subway.
Flint Marco.
What do you want from me?
Remember Ben Parker? The old man you shot down in cold blood?
What does it matter to you anyway?
Yeah, I kind of don't want to see that.
I totally want to see it.
Really?
Yeah, remember I saw it being filmed in New York when I went there. I want to see that scene that I saw.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Scott Daly. Scott will have a...
I already did.
Well, he saw it, but he said he's not allowed to...
Oh, he wasn't...
It was embargoed, as they say.
How would they know?
He was not allowed to... Well, that's true. I mean, it's not like, the people in Sony Pictures are listening to this show. This guy says, Holly Hunter... Listen to this. Holly Hunter is the mom in 13. And then it just says, sluts. Jay. All right. Thanks, Jay. All right. It's 503-733-2970. We should take a break here. We'll take a break. Come back. More from Tim Riley later on. We have, what else? Jim Roof coming up later on in the program. A top five as well. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. You stay right there.
Every single night, the same arrangements, I go out and fight the fight. Still I always feel the strangest estrangement, nothing here is real, nothing here is right. I've been making shows of trading blows, just hoping no one knows. But I've been going through the motions, walking through the parts. Nothing seems to be. brave and kind of righteous. Now I find I'm wavering. Crawl out of your grave, you find this fight.
You are.
You got that swing.
Thanks for noticing.
She does pretty well.
Okay, I can sing along with every word.
Okay, well, stop. I want to enjoy it.
She's just flowing through the motions.
Through the motions.
And somehow, she's not even half the girl she
out. Will I stay this way forever? Sleepwalk through my life's endeavor.
How can I repay?
Whatever, I don't want to be.
Never, well, I won't say I've never had to, but I don't ever worry about defending my love of Buffy the Vampire. I've had guys, you know, like dudes.
Guys.
Sort of manly guys, and they'll like, and they'll try to give me crap about, they'll try to flip me crap about being a, but not so much now, but I mean, back when it was still on the air, I would go on about how much I was a big Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, and they would totally, like, get in my face about it, like they thought that they were, like, going to impact my sense of self-worth by making fun of it. And I never understood why every guy on Earth didn't watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's a hot girl, and later, actually after the second season, it's two hot girls with a weird homoerotic subtext. It's two hot girls in tight leather pants fighting vampires. I mean, really, if you're a guy, a straight guy, and you don't watch that show, there really is something wrong with you. There really is. You really are defective in some fashion if you don't find that hot. And that's more of a YP than an MP, my friends. Anyway, so there you go. So I guess they're going to be doing that at Cinema 21, sing-along Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I will be there because I'm a tool. All right.
That's true.
503-733-2970.
Are you going to sing?
503, I... No, I don't know that I'm going to... I don't know that I'm going to sing. I might. You know, best song from Once More with Feeling? Go.
Well, that's my favorite one.
Really? Going through the motions? Uh-huh. I would say for me, I can't believe we're having this conversation. I would say for me, we're having a conversation about a show that aired like 4 years ago, and which is going to be replayed months from now. I would say for me, I dig that...
You're going to have to sing part of it.
No, I dig the... what's it? The Anya and Xander. They do the... whatever. They do the marriage,
yeah.
Like the I'll never tell.
That's a cute one.
When I get so old and wrinkly that I look like David Brinkley. Am I dreaming? Am I marrying a demon? Can really get going. Like marriage or hell. Hi.
You just did jazz hands.
I'm on math.
I just saw jazz hands. Oh, don't even use it.
Fantastic. All right, it's 503. Hello, let's talk about trucks. 503-733-2970. Everybody can shut your collective holes. David, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. I'm going to have to start working for the man on Sunday, so I'm not going to be able to listen to your show too much anymore.
Sorry, sir.
But I'm backing you up on Buffy. I mean, that I'm not a big musical guy as far as musicals go. But, that was a great episode. And anybody gives a crap about it can go pound it.
Thank you, sir. That's exactly what I'm saying. Thank you for being with me on this.
No problem, buddy.
It's good to know I don't stand alone. All right. It's 503-733-2970. We'll do some other things. And I got to talk to you about this, about Lara's friend. Who wants input on her? I don't know if she wants input on her personal life, but she's getting it. Tracy, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, I just wanted to know when are they airing that Buffy the Vampire musical?
Well, there's two different things we're talking about here. One is, and I believe this is at, God, was it the Baghdad? Where did somebody tell us that they're going to start airing the entire series from the beginning?
At the Mission Theater, they do that a lot, because they did that with Twin Peaks.
And they're doing it from the beginning all the way through? Like, they're airing the entire series, one episode a week or something like that. And then this is, though, at Cinema 21, which is on, well, I guess it's on 21st, right, in Northwest. Cinema 21 in Northwest, they're going to be playing the musical, I guess, three, 4 weeks from now, I think it is when they're going to be doing it. I'll totally be there, though. But, yeah, it's Cinema 21, and I think it's actually cinema21.com is the website.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir. There you go. Helping nerds across the fruited plain. This is the Rick Emerson Show. Okay, we got two things we can do here. I can talk about Lara's friend who wants input, or well, we might as well address this while we're...
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say, except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
All right, you know what else I like? I also like that when they're in the magic shop and what's-her-name is going, bunnies! It must be bunnies! Hi.
That's hilarious. I love that part.
I'm a tool.
You are.
Hi, Scotty J. How you doing today?
Doing great, Rick.
All right. Now, I don't even remember what I was going to bring you in for like an hour and a half ago when that Dan guy called up and ruined my mojo for a while. I don't even remember what it was. We were going to have some discussion about something. Oh, yeah. So.
You know.
Friday, Alice Cooper.
Yes.
Also Friday, Alison Arngrim, TV's Nellie Olson is going to be in the studio at 1 o'clock, right?
Right.
All right. And then have you made inroads on Joe Pantoliano?
Made a phone call and a message, but...
Haven't heard back yet?
No.
Okay. So I know he's doing 10 to 15 minute shots, and to our advantage, they said later in the day is better. Tell him we're huge proponents of... say this. Say the Rick Emerson Show... How can I lie convincingly here? Tell them that we really care a lot about the plight of the mentally ill. And that we've spent...
Well, obviously, yeah. I do that for everyone. Like we're interested in Nellie's, prairie deal.
Prairie whore. That's what my wife called it. My wife is like, can you get me tickets to that prairie whore?
Boy, that show just sounds so great. Can we please talk to her?
It does sound great. I have to admit that Nellie Olson, who is going to be at CC Slaughter's this Friday, and the thing is, I can't go. That's what sucks. I got three different things happening. I know that my life sounds really hard. I got three different things going on Friday. Nellie Olson's Prairie Whore, as my wife calls it. We've got George Carlin, and then I got Explosions in the Sky, who are playing at the Crystal, for which I've had tickets for like 6 weeks. And I've never seen those guys. So I got Explosions in the Sky, Nellie Olson, George Carlin. But those things are all happening at the same time on the same night. So I got to pick one of the three. That's what sucks.
And I would think you pick George Carlin.
The thing is, I've seen Carlin like four times. Not to knock him, I love George Carlin. But I've seen him like four times. I mean, it's a station event, so I think I'm going to end up going to that. What I'll probably do is do that and then go to the Crystal and see if I can catch some of Explosions in the Sky set if they're not done. And I'm not going to be able to see the Nellie Olson.
Maybe they're starting later.
Maybe there's an opening act or something. God, I hope George Carlin, I wonder if he has an opening act. I hope it's not some ukulele playing nitwit. I know, I swear to God, the first time I saw Carlin's act, it was at, I think it was at a... It was someplace in Utah. I forget what it was called, like the Opera House or someplace in Salt Lake. But I swear to God, his opening act was a musical comic. And as much as I hate most stand-up comedians, and I do, I hate about 98.999% of stand-up comics because they're all just hideous, terrible people. And not even in the interesting way. They're just hacks, all of them. He's the rare exception in that he doesn't suck. But I swear to God, his opening act was a musical comic. It was like a guy with a guitar. You know that comedy bit that shows up sometimes late at night here? It's like, what if that guy from Smashing Pumpkins lost his car keys? Like, imagine terrible version of that, but, like, not funny, and it goes on for, like, 45 minutes. And I'm not even, like, a drinker, so I don't even have to go to the beer garden. I'm just sitting there wishing I was dead.
Well, I hope Carlin doesn't go into a political tirade, because I went to see Crosby, Stills, and Nash this summer, and it was totally a Nash concert all about war and... peace. And
speaking of which, somebody sent us the new Toby Keith song.
Oh, no.
let's see, the new Toby Keith song. Let's see, where is it? It's right. Somebody sent it to me. Rick, I heard this. Here we go. Rick, I heard this and thought of you. This is Toby Keith. Toby Keith's new single. Who wants to guess what it's called? Toby Keith's new single.
I love my country.
I've been looking for my boots.
It's called the Taliban song.
Oh no.
I hope this is real. I hope it's not a fake. I'm going to Wikipedia it before we play it. All right. So, Scotty, Friday, Nellie Olson, Alice Cooper, maybe Joe Pantoliano.
Right.
I don't even remember. We had some other reason I was going to bring you in here. Oh, and by the way,
we're talking about the call screening.
While we're talking, what is your snippiness about having to screen calls? What is your problem?
I'm not snippy about that.
You totally are. You have full-on attitude about
it. You were like giving me a bunch of crap on the screen.
I'm snippy about the title call screener.
You are the call screener.
I hate that title.
You are the call screener.
It's demeaning. I have a college degree. I'm 4 years old. I make tons of money. And it's ridiculous to think that my title is call screener and that's how you view me.
Your title was an intern for a year and you drove in your $40,000 car.
And seriously, and by the way,
call quality controller.
I like that better. Things are better already.
And I'm not saying that's
the programming.
Well, look, and I'm not saying that. Okay, but nobody knows what that means.
I don't care if they know what it means. I don't like being called call screener.
You are a call screener.
You are.
This guy's on the phone. Hey, you're call screener, dude. I mean, I'm a little more than that.
I'm not saying that you're not more than that, and I'm not saying you don't do things beyond that, but it is inaccurate. Let me put it this way. It is accurate to say that you are a screener of calls. That's what you do. That is now what's right. Now you do other things.
But right. During the show, what do you think your role is?
Now, see, let me go to this first. Lycus, you know, he has his call screener, Dean of several years. And that's
Dean
Trade
Emilio.
Yeah, called call screener. And he's, like, proud of that. I'm not. I'm not proud of that. I'll be honest with you. I mean, it's one of the parts of the job that...
You know, call screening is an important link in the
programming.
It's an important link in the radio chain, Scotty.
It's part of the programming.
It is. Now, without...
There you go.
I'm just... Now, with you just seem unnecessarily defensive.
You're very angry about it.
I was a call screener about... I was a call screener at one point, and I was proud to screen calls.
That's how I started on this show.
I didn't say I wasn't proud to screen calls because I talked to a lot of very interesting people. I just don't like the... look, we're supposed to be diverse now that we've taken our little tests here at CBS, and I just don't think it's culturally diverse enough for me to just be called a call screener.
What does that mean?
I took a test today for CBS, right?
I have no idea. I swear to God, you try to...
Are you trying to...
First of all...
And you're pinning me into the call screener.
Did you have to take the culture of diversity test today?
Yes, I did.
Really?
I only missed one.
I don't think I had to take that test. Did anybody else here have to take the culture of diversity test?
I think I'm supposed to this week.
Yeah, I felt bad about
missing one. I don't remember doing that. All right, so...
Something on the convenience of email.
Are you really that and how you're, like, not supposed to take your email, your private emails, and, like, put them on a, you know, tack them up on a message board outside your house?
I haven't started yet. I give myself a couple hours at night after dinner.
Have you taken the one about indecency? The indecency test is hilarious because the indecency test is filled with profanity. I wish we could take it on the air, but we can't because it's so relentlessly... The CBS radio indecency test literally, and I am not exaggerating, literally contains... I don't know how they can... Well, never mind. But I'm just saying, literally, the CBS indecency quiz, which is basically to make sure that you know that the company's ass is covered so that if you say something that gets the station in trouble, they have proof that, like, they told you not to do it... The test literally contains phrases like, your morning man says, you know, MF on the air. How do you deal with this? Give him a verbal reprimand? Shrug it off? Give him a raise and a hearty congratulations or, you know, punish him somehow. It's the most absurd. They don't use euphemisms. Like the test doesn't say, your morning man says MF on the air. The test says, like, the actual MF word in the test that we're required to take. It's so bizarre.
It doesn't blank out any of it?
No, the CBS indecency test that we have to take uses the actual words.
Can you see, was Moonves reading this out loud at a board meeting?
I would love to see that. I would love to see one of the higher-ups in this company have to take that indecency quiz out loud. The afternoon guy, it refers to so-and-so as a C. How do you feel about, you know?
Oh, man.
How do you feel about that? What do you do? All right.
I don't think I've taken that one.
Okay, but and I was going to get to this other thing, but back to you for a minute. So...
You're very angry.
Are you honestly trying to, like, fold in your complaints about being called a call screener into the diversity test you had? You realize the diversity test
I'm a diverse person.
The diversity test basically is so that you can't, like, fire somebody because of who they are, what they practice, right?
Well, it's kind of also about, backing them into a corner and stereotyping and ethnic type slurs.
Okay,
or
do you know the call screeners? You know the call screener is not an ethnicity, right?
I realize that, but it feels like one.
I'm sure... I'm sure the ethnic peoples of the world appreciate your solidarity.
All right, Scotty J, if you're not a call screener, then what would you say the main part of your job is?
As long as you're not called
the main part of my job?
Yeah, walk us through, Scotty.
Believe it or not, Sarah.
The MFing call screener.
Yeah. Maybe the call screening is the most important part of my job, but the main part of my job, I do a lot of assisting in the programming as far as, you know, the podcasting and the...
You do a lot of editing, you do a lot of production.
I'm doing crap all behind the scenes way longer before and after the show than I am actually answering phone calls, because half the time, like, you know, during news hour or whatever, there might only be one phone call. I'm getting a ton of stuff done.
We've made the observation before.
Who's
on the air, at the listener party, we made this observation. You do many things that people don't know about. You do a lot of the audio editing. You create a lot of, a lot of the work you do, you create for yourself. Because a lot of times, this has to be true. This has to be said. You edit the podcast every day, and of course, like a top five or something will put together something. You book a guest. Now, a lot of times, I'll go back there, and I swear to God, you're spending like half an hour on a sound effect that no one asked you to make.
Right.
Like that Glengarry Glen Ross, Alec Baldwin, disgusting little pig thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how long you spent, but I walked by the 3, 4, 5 segments in a row, and you were working on editing the Glengarry Glen Ross speech together with the phone call to his daughter, which no one asked you to do.
Yes, you did.
I did not. I never did. I said on the air, I said, you know, somebody out there ought to do this. At no point did I ask you to do it, and at no point did we ever even play it. I'm just saying, a lot of work, like when you create, you know, like the other day you created that new Scotty sounder with the David Cassidy, but it's like much longer.
Right.
I'm not criticizing you for doing it. I'm just saying that is something no one requested.
That was like 3 seconds.
You do create a lot of work for yourself is my only point.
Okay.
So, and you do screen calls.
So I will.
Do you realize there are people out there that would give anything to work at a radio station? I'm not done about the glory of us at any radio station who would screen calls and would consider it an honor to have that job.
I think that's great, Rick.
You're just above it.
Whatever. Paint. Duck.
Is it true that you have yet another new vehicle as of yesterday?
Maybe.
How many cars, how many vehicles do you own?
I got rid of the one car. You know,
the Cadillac?
That you rode in.
Okay, the blue one.
Mm-hmm.
So you now have what?
And so then I took over the other car that my wife was driving. Kind of took that over.
Fancy cool.
How many vehicles do you now have?
Just two.
Okay, you had, you had a truck before.
Right.
Okay, you had a truck, and you had a Cadillac, right. And you had that blue car.
Right.
Wow.
And the blue car was because the truck was sitting, because of the price of gas, and I was trying to save from going from Beaverton to Gresham and back every single day, and which was the purpose of the
blue car. Am I understand that you're saving money now by purchasing another car?
Yes.
Okay, so gas went up by about 18 cents, and you don't want to spend that, but you bought a whole new car.
Well, there's a couple of reasons for this. Number one, it's 2007, and my old truck was 2004. So I'm sure there's a few engine, you know, changes there. I probably gained an extra mile. The other truck was a, you know, 3/4 ton. This one's a 1/2 ton, so
you
saved some gas there.
So the truck was 3 years old, and you felt it was just time for a new one.
It needed an oil change.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hello?
Hi there.
Hey.
Hey.
Commenting on the Taliban song.
Oh, yeah. Have you heard the Taliban song?
Oh, many times.
Is it awful?
No, it's awesome. I love Toby.
Okay, really? Are you being serious?
No, he plays the role of a middle-aged, Middle Eastern camel-herding man.
God, are you kidding me?
In North Afghanistan.
Does he rhyme man with Afghanistan?
He does, and I don't know. I went and saw him with my parents at the Rose Garden a couple years ago, and he encourages people to flip him off during it for some reason.
Fantastic. Does he encourage people? Does he encourage people to enlist in the military?
No.
Yeah, go figure.
Of course not.
I mean, why would you want to do that?
That's actually somewhat implied. Okay. When you show up at a Toby Keith concert.
Yeah.
But,
Well, I'll wait for him to sign up then.
I don't know. When you play it, it's gonna make me smile. So.
Well, that's what we live to do, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Good day.
Hi.
I'm listening about Scotty. He's displeased with his station in life. At least he's not a tracer.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you. Good reference, sir.
May I say this? You know when you see, let's say, the trailer for Star Wars episode, fill in the blank, and you get a really large trailer, and the closer and closer it gets to, you know, the opening day,
the trailer will start to get shorter and shorter and shorter, and pretty soon the movie has come out, and it's like, here's a 15-second teaser type of thing of everybody understands what the movie is,
yes.
Blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Okay. Please, please to be changing the Scotty J summons to the...
The Scotty J, yeah, this is David Cassidy.
We got the point.
Amazing.
It was a minute and a half long. Now let's consolidate it down to, Scotty, could you come to the thing? Come in here, and then let's just be done with it.
Amazingly, Scotty, just the other day, I was just referencing, has given us one that's even longer. This is what I'm talking about. He spent, God knows how long the other day, creating a version of that, sir. I swear to God, let me find it right here and I'll play it. He, one that's even longer than that. Scotty, what is it called? Long? Oh, it's just called David Cassidy Long Sounder.
I would be pleased if it was nothing more than, beam us up, Scotty. You're not going to amount to diddly squat, and that's just the point.
Listen now. I swear to God, this is not a gag. Listen to the new, this. We won't be switching, but listen to the new version of this he's given us. Here we go, sir.
Next message. Saved Saturday at 9:24 p.m.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy calling. I called the hotline and I must have let it ring 25, 30 times. Never got any answer. So I wanted to let you know it's 1:23 in the afternoon my time. Probably 10:23 your time.
Sorry, I'm just it's starting to hit me like a heavy.
I don't know what else to say except
you're not going to amount to jack squat.
Beams up, Scotty.
End of message.
Seriously, that is 40.7 seconds long. So.
You can only remix Depeche Mode's Enjoyable Silence so many different ways.
Excellent. Bam. And we're out. Thank you, sir. Excellent. One more. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
I realize this is probably a stupid comment or question, but yes. Isn't he the PA? I thought that was phone answer.
Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
All right. There you go. All right. So I'm just saying... It seems like you ought to just embrace the fact that a large portion of what you do, it is accurate to call you the phone screener. That is what you do. Now, you do other things.
I was talking to Scotty J, your PA. There.
Let me ask you this. Is it accurate to call me a talk show host?
Yeah.
Okay, now, do I do things beyond that? Do I have other larger responsibilities here at the station?
Yes.
Okay, but it's accurate to call me a talk show host.
Yes, it is.
Well, it's accurate to call you a phone screener, my friend.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Long as we've got that resolved. Thanks so much. I appreciate that.
Next message. Saved Saturday at 9:24.
Well, you know, he just bought a new truck yesterday because his reasoning is that the other one was 3 years old. I mean, come on.
The car I'm driving is 12 years old.
I'm driving I'm driving a 4Runner from 1986. Just do the, and we got a break. We're so late. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. What's going on?
What's up?
So I think Scotty J is just feels like he needs more attention. And I was thinking, you know, I've been listening forever, and the F Matt thing I thought was great because it was you know, it's local, and you had to listen to the show to know what it meant.
Right.
But it doesn't really. You can't just say F Scotty. So I thought instead of doing that, you can have people end calls with. Scotty J is effing you tonight with a spool of barbed wire and a bag of lemons or something, you know?
It's just God Almighty.
That's funny.
Fantastic. I like the way you think, sir.
And I also, you were, earlier this week, you were talking about malaria and how to cure for it or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was thinking Sarah is actually at risk now. She used to have the only natural thing that prevented malaria. She used to drink vodka tonics because that has quinine in it, and it's the only mineral.
Oh, yeah, really? So vodka tonics, so you need to switch back to vodka tonics.
I did have a vodka tonic yesterday.
Well, there
that's
you go.
Pretty good.
So you're protected for the next day or so.
Keep me safe. Yeah, that's why they call it tonic, because back in the day when malaria was rampant in England, they would go down to the pub to get their tonic, and to make it taste good, they put gin in it.
And now you know, and knowing is half the battle, sir.
That is right. I drink for my health.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
All right. And Tim Riley, around the corner, will you have more news for the people?
Yes.
What is... Concise and accurate, as always. Fantastic. Best show ever. All right, the Rick Emerson Show. Back after this, coming up in just a skosh, Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. Later on, Jim Rootmore, your phone call. Stay there. their mouth. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up later, Jim Roop and Peter Carlin. Ladies and we'll get more of these calls here in a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
KCC's Rush Creek campus has been evacuated again today. Happens all the time, just because of a threatening note. School officials at the campus is closed. The note, which mentioned May 2nd as a day of violence, was found in Building 9 at Rock Creek campus around 11 o'clock. The campus is evacuated, and it's the second time in 8 days that it's been closed, so it's happening quite a bit. So, it's Rock Creek. Meanwhile, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said she had a good meeting with the president today.
He expressed his willingness to work together in good faith, the right approach to coming together to find our common ground.
House Minority Leader John Boehner said it was a good meeting.
It's time for us to put our differences aside and to begin to look for common ground to try to make sure that our troops get the funding that they need.
California Republican Jerry Lewis criticized congressional Democratic leader.
You made your point. You had your dog and pony show. Now what is your plan to support the troops? It is time to put the posturing and political stunts aside and do what is the best in the best interest of our troops.
I didn't see one dog or one pony.
No. Where is your dog now?
From Texas comes word, Garland police are warning area merchants about a pair of crooks who are stealing cigarettes.
These guys are very bold. They walk in the door. They go straight to the cigarette area, which is behind the cash registers. They have their own plastic bags, and they start loading them up with cartons of cigarette.
Cartons of cigarette.
They become increasingly bold.
The second two that we've had are now classified as robberies, and that's because on April the 21st and on April the 29th, they come in, they go behind the counter, but this time they made threats towards the clerks that were working there.
Okay. Behind the registers, where they're packing bags full of cigarette. All right.
For American Idol, Blake Lewis received extra points for putting a funky spin on the song You Give Love a Bad Name.
You give love, love, well, love, 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 a bad, bad name. You give love, 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 a bad name. Just do the heart. We are to blame, darling. You give love a bad name. I play my part and you play your game. You give love a bad name.
No.
Who was that?
Is this the Blake Lewis?
Is he the beatboxer?
I don't know one from the other.
I don't have the beatboxer. There's a guy in American Idol who he does beatboxing, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that in theory. But there's certain songs. Look, just like you shouldn't use a slide when you decide to play Green Sleeves on the guitar, you shouldn't use beatboxing when you sing You Give Love a Bad Name by Bon Jovi. Can you play just the first part of that again, where he's doing the beatboxing? This is terrible. This is terrible, this idea. That's among the worst things I've ever heard. Is he gone? Did they vote him off?
I don't know.
Okay, or is that tonight? I guess we don't know.
No, that's tonight, yeah.
All right. But I think John Bon Jovi was on the show. Which is fine, because that's what he does.
Yep.
He panders.
He received tips from Bon Jovi himself.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Simon Cowell plants a kiss on Lakeisha Jones and Ryan Seacrest react.
Lakeisha, I actually could kiss you after that.
Of your lipstick on his lips is priceless.
Is it priceless? Okay.
Wow.
Bill Stacey got rave reviews from Eddie Jackson and Paula Abdul for this performance, but Simon Cowell called it a bad actor playing a role.
I love this song. This is a great song. It's hard to outdo the Jove, though. Especially with John Bon Jovi there. You can't, it's really hard to, perform that guy. You know what that was not? That was not priceless. Oh, that's fantastic.
Well, Don Imus isn't going away quietly. Fortune magazine says the talker has hired a top First Amendment attorney. At issue is language in Imus's $40 million contract with CBS that stipulates he be given a warning before being fired. Attorneys for CBS contend that Imus was fired for cause and therefore isn't allowed the rest of that money.
Well, that's the thing, is they're trying, because he makes $10 million a year,
mm-hmm.
and he had 4 years left on the contract, and they're trying to say CBS is trying to say that they were right to fire him, and Imus's contract allegedly contains this one-bite clause, I think they call it, which is where he's allowed one horrendous F-up, and then they warn him, and then a second one they can fire him for.
So the language encouraged the radio host to be irreverent and engage in character attacks, but avoid crossing an undefined line. According to one source, the language in the agreement was part of a five-year contract that went into effect in 2006. It stipulates that Imus be given a warning before being fired for doing what he has made a career out of, making off-color jokes. One source describes this as a dog-has-one-bite clause.
Yeah.
About the CBS spokesman, and I must decline comment on possible legal action.
Well, and radio is all about undefined lines and vague boundaries that won't be explicated or quantified by anybody. So, all right. Let's do another one here, and then we'll get these phone calls.
Let's do a Britney watch.
Here's your Britney watch for Wednesday. I keep thinking it's Thursday. Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Show. Think I did it again.
The troubled Britney Spears has given her first concert in nearly 3 years, just over a month after coming out of rehab and reaching a divorce settlement. She put on a 15-minute show in front of a few hundred revelers at San Diego's House of Blues, lip-syncing her way through a handful of her most popular hits, apparently five of them. The concert came after a tumultuous several months that saw Spears give birth to her second child, file for divorce, and brazenly shave her head. It was billed as a concert by an unknown band called the M&Ms. But word that Spears was to perform spread like wildfire. Some of the tickets got, these tickets apparently went for like $35, but got scalped for $500 after word got out. It wasn't a good move for her career, said a ticket holder. When you come out and do four songs in lip sync, why, that's not what Britney fans come to see. But some female fans were impressed. I think she worked the stage and her body looked great. So it's good to see her back, proving us all wrong.
I know this makes you sound like a grumpy...
For 10 minutes... Ugh.
That's what I'm saying.
She just looks horrible. Her body looks great. Did you see what she was wearing?
No.
She's wearing, like, patent leather white go-go boots.
Oh, I did see that.
And black tights and, like, a horrible, like, little white skirt and like,
bad
a dark
wig.
Brown wig.
Yeah.
She looked bad.
And I know that it makes me sound like a grumpy old guy when I say that apparently, you know, is that what a concert... And that's what counts as a concert now, is lip-syncing four songs for 10 minutes. That really is... I guess that the bar is set very low. All right. There's your Britney watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Show. Radio program.
Britney, before you go, there's something I want you to ask.
See, my problem is
this. This email actually says, Tim Riley has inadvertently named our band. We were kicking around band names, but we decided that now we will be the Molesting Douches. Thank you, Tim Riley. Thank you so very much.
There you go, Tim.
Well, I hope I get tickets to see their performance. To see your orchestra impacting the world in a positive way. That's Tim Riley. Let me get a couple of these. Doug, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, you know, I'd like to hear a lot more from Scotty. Maybe a little less from Sarah.
No, okay. First of all, who is this?
Seriously.
No, okay, I know, seriously.
I've opened my mouth like once this past hour.
Seriously.
There he goes. Now, see, Sarah, too much. More, I think Scotty, he deserves it, he earns it. I'm listening more because of him.
Yes, this sounds very spontaneous.
He's using a voice alternating device.
Yeah, is that true?
That's not what it sounds like.
Keep talking, Doug.
Members of the mob.
Keep talking, Doug.
15 minutes.
Hey, he doesn't, Rick. You got a poodle and you're in a bowling league.
List the ways in which you find Scotty J to be compelling, please.
Huh?
List the ways in which you find Scotty J to be compelling.
Well, I happen to agree on pretty much everything he says about George Bush and the war, for one.
I see. So it's not so much that you find him compelling; it's just that you're pro-war.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Uh-huh.
I'm all for that. Yeah, I am.
This is a really gripping phone call.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, listen. I can't. I was was hoping there was somewhere to go there, but really there wasn't. This now makes the third phone call inside about 7 days, and they all have, suspiciously enough, they all have the same kind of diction, and they all have the same kind of phrasing when they call up and ask for more Scotty J. Well, we'll get that in a second. We got multiple Chris's here. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Doug, you shut your mouth about Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. I do like Scotty J.
That's okay. It's hard for me to even
be... a great person.
It's hard for me to even be irritated about that last call, because the guy so clearly was... You can... Here's the thing. I don't mean to be picking on that guy. I do. You can tell, in talk radio, you hear guys like this, and I have been doing radio long enough, and I'm not the only one, but I can tell guys like this from the first three or four words. And I heard a guy, there was a guy just like this on Like Us yesterday, actually. You can tell from the tone of their voice, there's something about the way they speak, and I don't know what it is, there's something about their phrasing and about their inflection and the kind of tone that they use. You can tell it's a guy who is convinced that he is hilarious, and whose conversations chain together like a bunch of really bad, stale sort of one-liners. But they're convinced that they ought to be, like, opening for somebody at the Sands. You know what I mean? And,
it sounds like they've rehearsed it and they're going over the cue cards in their mind.
Exactly. That's totally the sound. And it's always sort of a 70s kind of sounding male. That's the guy. Those are always the guys who do that.
And there's always like a little question in the back, even though they're asking, yeah. Even though they're making a statement, it sounds like a question.
And they pause for applause. There's moments where they pause because they anticipate uproarious laughter from the crowd. How can I help you, sir?
I was just calling, you know, yeah, Scotty J doesn't like being called the call screener. And I'm like, okay, fine. Everything has a pecking order. Even, you know, schools, you're a squeaker, you're a freshman, you're a senior. You know, even in the work class, you have your different orders. You know, you got to fall somewhere. Yeah, true. So, I mean, yeah, he does special work, so couldn't you just call him the special friend?
Somebody has suggested, I've got this now, somebody said, Scotty J will be head of this new department, the Special Human Interactive Telephony. So that's what somebody is, Special Human Interactive Telephony. All right, yes, thank you, sir. Let's get Ken in Southeast Portland. Ken, hello.
Hi, how you doing, Rick?
What's up, Ken?
Oh, not much. I'm just wanted to call and issue a warning for anyone that misses one of your listener parties.
Yes.
I was the guy that called in the day before the listener party that had the funeral to go to in San Diego.
Oh, yeah, this is the guy. And we were talking, you had to go to San Diego for some relative you didn't even like, family members you don't even care for. And Tim and I were both telling you that, A, you weren't going to make it, or it was going to be expensive, or it was not going to be worth it.
Oh, man. The radio gods really wreaked havoc on me, because I made it down there in about 16 hours. And the reason I went down was I got a $2,000 inheritance. Well, on the way back, I thought, well, I'll take a trip over to Reno. I got some extra money, and my car blew up. And so I was stuck in the middle of BFE, and basically was sitting there the whole time thinking, I should have gone to the show.
Well,
I should have listened to you guys, and I should have gone to the, you know, the listener show.
I will
and
say.
I finally got back in town. I tell you what, dealing with country mechanics that are closed 4 days out of seven, took me forever to get back, and my $2,000 inheritance was basically spent on fixing my car and getting back to Portland. I just got back today, and I wanted to call in and just say, for anyone out there, always go to the listener show.
That's what I'm saying. See, and I don't mean to rub it in.
You guys tried to warn me, and the whole time I was thinking, oh, no, I know why. I made an error in judgment.
We did. Tim and I both spent we spent about 10 minutes trying to convince you to stay here, because if you went to San Diego, things were going to go badly. And again, I don't wish to rub it in, but I'm simply saying now you understand that we did have your best interest at heart, sir.
Exactly. And I just wanted to call and let you guys know that, by the way, since I was out of town, how did the listener show go?
It was fantastic. If you go to 970.am, there's a bunch of videos and a huge photo gallery. It's like 300 photos.
Oh, wonderful. I just got back into town, and I'm trying to get my bearings back. I'm so glad to be home.
Well, so when you're, you know, in between drinking yourself into a coma and sitting weeping, staring at the floor, feeling empty and alone, if you want to rub that into yourself at some point, you can go to a 970.am, check out the gallery.
Oh, I tell you, I've spent the last week just rubbing it into myself, going, kicking myself. So I just wanted to give a fair warning to any of your listeners.
Yeah, that's
miss the party, because the radio gods will come down on you very hard.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. There you go. This email says, if Scotty is unhappy with his station in life, perhaps he should have gone to a real college. He should quit living off the teat of Mrs. J as if she needs another child. There are plenty of nicer, funnier, younger, and less bitter people you could get to be a call screener. I'm simply reading the email. I'm not making any judgments about the content of said email. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We should break, right? I think we have Peter Carlin coming up. And then we have, let's see, what do we have? We have Peter Carlin. We have Jim Roop, I think, coming up. Oh, so much we haven't got. We still haven't got to the story. May have to wait till tomorrow now, unfortunately. Oh, good God. All right, stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Back at this is Andrew W.K. Don't go anywhere. Somebody's giddy.
Okay, is that not the coolest thing ever?
That's very cool. Do you want to say it or should I?
You can say it.
All right, so during the break, now, as you know, author and Portland resident Chuck Palahniuk was in the station yesterday. He wasn't here, but he was in the building. He was being interviewed by Court and Fatboy. Nights 7 to midnight on Rock 101 KUFO. And those they're very cool guys. And so we met him yesterday. We met and talked to him for, I don't know, a minute or two. And he seemed like a cool guy. And so Court from Court and Fatboy just came in during the break and handed Sarah Dillon a brand new hardcover copy of Rant, which is the new Palahniuk book.
Which just came out today.
And it is, it's got a little personal inscription to Sarah Dillon from Chuck Palahniuk inside. How cool is that?
Oh my God, I'm so excited!
It's very cool, and it says Sarah Dillon, and then he has a little blurb, and then he signed it Chuck Palahniuk right inside the cover of his brand new book. How cool is that?
I am so giddy. I'm so excited. I can't stop hugging it. I'm just going to sit here and hug it the rest of the show.
Now you are, and you gave Court a hug, which is, it takes a lot to get a hug.
Oh, yeah, I went running at him. That is so nice of him, because they know how, disappointed I was that we weren't able to get him on the show. But
totally.
And how nerdy we were when we were waiting for him.
I'm just here to see Chuck, so now you've got that. That is very cool, actually. Right on. Well, good for you.
I'm so excited.
It is. It's really cool.
Kevin Chuck Palahniuk wrote my name in the book.
It is fantastic. Did he spell it right?
He did.
Excellent. Good for him. Well, that's cool. See, now you've got a new favorite thing.
That and my Meatloaf guitar.
Yeah. It's like, you're not much of a Douglas Adams fan. He wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But, I have, there is, in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, there's the number 42, which is really, really important. And it's a whole nerd thing. But the number 42 is really important in the world of Douglas Adams.
Is that why you and Mailman Chris always say it back and forth?
42! Yeah, totally. Or and Aaron and Jen and anybody who's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fan. That's why you'll hear us talk about, 42! Because that's huge in Douglas Adams. And he's dead now, but when I met him, I had him autograph page 42 of my book, and then I lost it. I don't know where it is.
Oh, no.
It was like, to Rick, Douglas Adams, and it was on page 42 of my Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I have no idea where it is. It's like somewhere in my possession.
I'm going to have to buy another copy of this because I don't want to break the
line. Yeah, you don't want to sully it.
No.
Yeah, totally. You got to keep that. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Later on, Jim Roof from CNN, more from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. I gotta get the I Love Lucy thing back again for. I'll just use the Constantini fireworks here. Hold on for the. Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. With a heart full of hate and a head full of pudding, it's Peter Carlin, TV critic for the Oregonian. Hello, sir.
Hello.
And how are you on this fine Wednesday?
I'm okay, man, but it's raining like crazy.
Somebody told us it's lightning.
Yeah, lightning and thunder.
Well, now it's like hail.
Really?
It's the size of basketballs.
I think that's the size of canned hams. I think that hail is kind of cool, actually. I think it's kind of cool when the weather crunches under your feet. You know what I mean?
It's some messed up weather, dude.
It is. It's April. No, it's May.
It's May.
What the hell?
This is what it does in May.
You know what?
It's that crazy spring weather where, like, the winter pattern and the summer pattern sort of fight it out.
I blame global warming.
Yeah.
This is why it's not that I disbelieve in global warming. It's just that I disbelieve meteorologists because they never know what the hell is going on. I mean, they're really just picking. It's like a magic eight ball, but less accurate. So is that the sound of hail that I'm hearing?
Yes, sir.
Wait, can you hold the phone up to wherever you are?
Yeah. Hang on. Do you hear that?
That's insane.
It's basketball size.
Jesus.
Well, or maybe it's more like a volleyball.
It's an earth ball. It's more of a tether ball size.
Kind of a medicine ball size.
All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to snort there. Hey, so let's talk about a few things. And we never did get a hold of the Turnoff TV people, but I realized I didn't really care. So
Yeah. They were mad. They sent a letter to the editor last week. The dude did. And he said that I was an antisocial bully.
Really? Well, you know, you should put that on your business card or maybe at the top of your resume.
Well, I said, I in my defense, I believe I'm a bully. I cop to that. But, hello?
You're relatively social.
Are you there? You see, I just heard this weird click, and it came accompanied with a burst of thunder, and I thought, the lightning just done took out the whole thing.
Oh, that's, this is, I'm going to be that DJ you always hear about where lightning hits the tower, and then it goes into my headphones and kills me.
That would be going out with a bang. So I'm a bully, okay, but I'm quite socialized.
Yeah, you are socially integrated with the best of them.
Yeah.
So I did this terrible thing. Bless me, Peter, for I have sinned.
Okay.
I did this awful thing. The Shield airs in France, and they air two episodes a week. In France.
Oui.
Yeah. Yes. There are two episodes aired every week there, which means that they are almost done with the season. Do you know how many episodes of The Shield there are in this season? Are there 7 or 9 or 12 or do you know?
I think it's like 12.
Okay. So episode 5 of this season just aired in America last night.
Okay.
But this guy sent me an email. And he's like, I know these are, you know, out there lurking around on the internet, but he's like, here's a link. He's like, click this. This will take you to my website or whatever. And he's like, don't pass it around, but click here, and you can watch, like, the next 3 episodes now. And so I fought with it for about an hour, and then I just completely gave in to temptation.
Whoa.
And I likened it to finding a copy of the new Harry Potter book, like, on a bus. You know, like, you would totally go home and read it. So I now have seen all the way through episode 7. And by the way, if people are listening, I will not give spoilers. I will not reveal what happens beyond last night. But I got to tell you, in that show, every week you think they can't kick you any harder in the gut, and they just continue to do it. But anyway, I've read ahead a couple of chapters. But last night, man, when Shane confesses to Mara that he killed Lem.
Yeah.
I mean, that is that scene where he shows up at Mara's house and she's already booting him out for having sex with the nearly underage whore or whatever
nearly.
She is. Is she underage?
Look that way to me.
Well, whatever. So some,
well, who knows?
Yeah, but she's a hooker. She's, or at the very least, a woman of questionable, virtue. And Shane is getting it on with her and whatever. And so Mara has kicked him out, and he gets jumped and beaten up, and it's just a bad time for him all the way around. And then that sequence at the end, when he shows up at the house and just breaks down and confesses the whole thing about Lem, I mean, that is one of the darkest moments in that show's 6 seasons so far, which is saying something. I mean, it really is. It's hard to imagine. It's hard to conjure up sequences from the show's history that are that dark and that just sort of unsettling. The only sequence, I mean, apart from that whole business of David Aceveda and the gun and the raping, that was bad. But the sequence from a couple weeks ago where Vic just hung that guy by his wrist and then just beat him with a chain for a day and a half, that was bad too. But I got to tell you, I have a sneaking suspicion, and I don't know, but I have a sneaking suspicion I know how this season ends. It seems to me now that the show, and again, I don't know, but it seems like The Shield almost has to end with Vic going to prison. I mean, it almost had, or dead. I don't know how it could not end that way now. Because they're just stripping away every little bit of protection that guy's got in his circle. Would you agree?
It sort of seems that way.
I mean, do you know how...
At some point, it looks like it's going to come down to a him-or-me type of situation with him and Shane.
Right, right.
And don't you feel... I feel like Shane is kind of a badly photocopied version of Vic.
Yeah, totally.
But interestingly enough, when I was in L.A., I think last summer, I was talking to Walton Goggins, who's
right.
The guy who plays Shane. And Walton believes, and he's a sweet guy, And he won an Oscar, did you know that, for directing a short movie?
I didn't. I did not know that.
Or producing or whatever.
Good for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he's sitting there, and first of all, he's smoking those Marlboros just like Shane does.
Right on.
And yeah, that's so cool. But second of all, we're talking, and I was trying to say, like, I basically was trying to say, you know, your character's kind of an idiot. But he was playing, like his whole riff, I can't paraphrase him, but basically was, no, Shane is, like, totally cool. He really is Vic's wingman. He makes Vic possible by being, like, this totally on the ball, second
right.
in command. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, I don't think so. Because everything, that bit with Army, remember when he had that other partner kind of busted up for a while, and he was trying to kind of run those same kind of scams?
Yeah.
And it all just goes horribly, horribly wrong. Because he can't think like those two, three steps ahead that Vic always does.
He doesn't have the sort of paranoia, and he doesn't have the discipline, as undisciplined, as wild as Mackie can sometimes be. He has this ironclad will within himself that Shane has no impulse control.
No, and Shane just doesn't have the mental firepower
right.
that Vic has.
Right, right.
But
and I would also say that Shane, until this whole recent incident with Lem sort of forced it out of him, Shane didn't really have a moral code either. Not the way that Vic does. Vic, as you said, is sort of corrupt but virtuous, I think is what you said, or corrupt but moral.
Yeah.
And Shane, although he had developed this late-breaking conscience about Lem, really isn't that way. He just doesn't. He is a guy who just kind of doesn't give a rip.
Well, he has fits of conscience, but it's not... But they're sort of passing. I mean, it's not going to stop him from doing the next stupid thing. I mean, it's not like... I mean, obviously, I mean, the crushing thing about last season was the way that the one really decent guy in that whole outfit, who, of course, was Lem, ended up, you know, getting executed,
right.
basically. And, of course, for the wrong reasons.
Totally.
I mean, because for no reason, because Shane was too stupid to figure out that he was getting played by Kavanaugh and Aceveda.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, and again, that's just the heartbreaking thing. I mean, and it was one of those weird things where, like, sometimes if there's a really disturbing news story, it'll kind of, like, disturb my sleep, or I'll lie in bed and get exercised about it when I'm trying to get to sleep at night. And then, like, but never with TV shows till that episode of The Shield.
You mean where he blows up Lem?
Where he blew up Lem. It was like two or three nights before I wasn't thinking about that when I was lying in bed at night.
Yeah, me too. I was that way. And it's funny you mention this, because I was talking about this on Monday, that it was Sunday night that I read ahead, and I watched that episode where Shane confesses to Mara that he killed Lem. I watched that Sunday, and I tossed and turned all night trying to sleep, and I had these weird dreams that were sort of shot through with moments from The Shield.
Yeah.
And it was in my head. It really seriously rattled me. I mean, it really did freak me out.
Well, You know, when I also talked to Chiklis at that same party, and he told me that after that episode where they killed Lem, like, he says it usually when, after episodes had aired, no matter where he is, he gets a phone call from his dad.
Right.
Which is usually, like, a minute or two after the show ends, and he'll say, oh, great job, or blah, blah, blah. But anyway, he said, like, so the episode ends, phone doesn't ring. Finally, after, like, half an hour, the phone rings, and it's his dad, and he's like, I don't know about that. He was mad.
Fantastic.
Because everyone loved the character, and then the actor, Kenny Johnson, is
right.
a really cool guy, too. So
right.
They all felt horrible.
I got to say that, and the thing about that show is it just they can never... They always fooled me. Like, I never saw Kavanaugh going down the way he did.
Yeah.
I never saw any of that. So it's they're keeping me guessing. So they're doing this season, they're going to finish this up, and then one more, and then we're done, right?
Yeah.
All right. And then we're coming down the home stretch in The Sopranos, too.
Right.
Did it seem like Tony's gambling problem kind of came out of nowhere? Like,
you know, interesting. That was, I was sitting there watching that wondering, like, hey, what the hey? Because when they hadn't even mentioned that at all. Like, is it even a remote factor in his life? Till the episode a week ago this Sunday.
Right.
When he called Heshy out of the blue and said he needed that $200,000 bridge loan, and he said it was to cover gambling debts, but he had said to Carmella earlier that he'd had to take it on the lam. He really needed to get out of town because of the investigation.
They found those bones or whatever.
That he'd murdered years earlier. But he told her it was a gambling beef or something. And I thought, you know, some small bore thing. And I thought, you know, he's using this gambling thing as an excuse to get other things achieved. And I thought, what I wondered was whether he was telling Heshy he wanted this money for gambling, but actually he was just going to stick it aside because he was planning to bolt.
Right, right.
Or do something wild that he needed a lot of cash for. But then it turned out, no, it's this gambling thing. And I don't know, you know, I'm not sure how I feel about that. When I was watching the episode on Sunday, I was really thinking, like, wow, this episode feels threadbare. This one, you know, I can kind of feel, for the very, you know, one of the first times, I can really hear the machinery clanking under the plot.
It just seems like one of those very special episodes of Family Ties or something.
Yeah, well, you know, and also, but my problem was, my larger problem was, and not everybody agrees with me, and a lot of the smart people whose blogs and things I've been reading, you know, who really get deep into the show, feel completely differently than I did. And so I'm not committed to this notion yet. But I thought to myself, of all the, you know, the amazing, the depth of knowledge that they've shown these characters, and the way that little hints that are dropped in the first episode play out in big ways years down the line, you know, for all of that, is this really going to be, like, the thing that leads to Tony's destruction?
Right.
This gambling thing that we didn't even know about 2 weeks ago that nobody ever mentioned?
Right.
You know, that seemed kind of like a cop-out. Except for, you know, they also like to throw red herrings around, and, you know, and so there's that. And also, I don't know, maybe it is realistic that a midlife guy who's having, you know, in the midst of an ongoing existential crisis might suddenly, you know, get wrapped up in something like gambling.
He does have that sort of, whatever, that deus ex machina or whatever that is, that feel, the sort of the invisible hand of God just coming down and, you know, whatever. My wife's big complaint about it was that it robbed Tony and his life of so much of the kind of glamour that makes it compelling. She's like, you know, I don't want to think about Tony Soprano barely keeping his head above water financially. She said it just makes the character that much less compelling. She's like, you know, she's like, if I want that, I'll just, like, live my daily life. She's, you know, just like, why do I want to watch this mobster who has no money?
Well, part of the thing is, you know, I mean, or maybe another point they could be making is that, you know, when these big-time mobsters go down, you know, it's always for some, like,
something pedantic.
Yeah, or some little, not pedantic.
What's the word? What is the word I'm looking for?
Picayune or something.
Picayune. Well done, sir.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always like some tax beef. You know, it's always some little bit. You know, it's like the equivalent of your taillight being out.
Right. Right. Totally. The Capone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, maybe that's the point. I mean, maybe he gets tripped up by this little thing, you know, or maybe, you know, who knows? Or maybe he doesn't get tripped up at all.
Maybe it's the thread on the sweater that unravels it. Or yeah, or maybe they're just throwing it off because they have done that. They have screwed with us in the past by throwing something in our path, and then they go a different direction. So, is there anything of note coming up in the next few days that we ought to be paying special attention to? I'm all wrapped up in this Mormon documentary on PBS, but is there any beyond that anything?
Well, there's that Ahmet Erdogan documentary, which I believe is on tonight.
Oh, really? What?
PBS.
Is that on PBS tonight?
Yeah.
He's the founder of Atlantic Records.
Yeah, yeah.
Just signed more musical legends than I can shake a stick at.
Everybody from Ray Charles to Otis Redding
to Led Zeppelin.
Clapton to Zeppelin. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. That is tonight on PBS. Fantastic. I am all over that, my friend.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, real quickly, most depressing TV theme song? Go.
Most depressing TV theme song?
Yes.
Laverne and Shirley.
Really?
Yeah, we're going to, what's that? I can't even remember. Is that
we're going to do it our way. Give us any chance, we'll take it.
Yeah, like hell. It's the 50s. And there are these lower class, blue collar dames, you know? I mean, come on.
You'll die broke and alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. With a heart full of hate and a head full of snakes, it's Peter Carlin. Thank you, sir.
Hey, no sweat.
Read him in print in the Oregonian online at OregonLive.com. All right, fantastic. Back after this with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth and Jim Roop in Los Angeles. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show.
What?
You're among the worst people I've ever met.
So did you think that girl was cute?
No, baby.
Nah.
She looks like a scarecrow.
She was really beaky in person.
She's beaky, she's got straw-like hair and very deep wrinkles. F her. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. We're not talking about anybody that anybody knows.
Except for me, she's my new special friend.
Uh-huh. Maybe. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator. Meow.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Cardominous clouds, hail, thunder, lightning. A wild and woolly mix of weather as we speak. Marvel-sized hail has nailed the Portland area as a thunderstorm is moving drought. It's setting off car alarms, leaving the ground white with ice. Not to be outdone, our neighbors to the north in the Couve, apparently they have some golf ball-sized hail in the Couve and throughout Clark County. It's battering that town. Not that anybody might notice. Tonight, showers will decrease as the atmosphere stabilizes. These breaks will be short-lived. More showers and thunderstorms are on the way.
Jesus, I really am glad I didn't bicycle today.
Meanwhile, Multnomah County's first case of the Hunta virus has been reported. And we'll get into that after we visit with Jim Roof.
The Hunta virus.
The Hunta virus.
Is that a virus that overthrows your government?
We'll find out.
Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from Los Angeles, CNN Radio Chorus, Funded of the Stars. Jim Roof, hello, sir.
Howdy.
What's up with you, brother man?
Just, waiting for the chief to say the cops were wrong.
I'm sorry?
I'm waiting for a news conference to start about that big melee that happened at the...
Oh, the May Day melee?
The May Day melee.
I just came up with that just now, by the way. Feel free to use that. Is it true that hippies were pelted with...
Day.
Is this hippies pelted with rubber bullets?
No. These weren't hippies. These were...
This is the MacArthur Park thing. So what is it that happened? Is it just there was protesters and the cops just waded in with billy clubs?
From my perspective?
Yes.
What happened was I heard this commotion behind me, and I saw some cops trying to get some protesters. Well, these guys weren't protesters. They were just there.
Right.
Trying to get them out of the street because you couldn't be blocking traffic.
Right.
They refused to get out of the street. They were walking real slow with their pants hanging down and the toothpicks and the tattoos. And the cops said, look, you got to move or we will move you. And so they started getting funky with the police. And I saw a bottle get thrown.
Mm-hmm.
And then so the police in the right gear all lined up and they just started combing the park and clear the park. And as they were clearing the park, anybody in their way got trampled or shot at with a non-lethal round.
Right.
I got the hell out of the way. Some people didn't.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You got out of the way. As such, you were not shot. Other people did not get out of the way. And
they were shot.
That's
now, that's maybe because I'm a radio guy, so I didn't need the pictures. My microphone was picking up enough noise.
Right.
And the photo guys, they need to get shot. So I saw one TV crew try to get through the line. It looks like they were going to come around behind the cops and shoot from that direction. As the cops move forward, they were going to be behind the police and shoot forward. But they wouldn't let them cross that line. And I've never seen that before. Usually you can snake your way through the cops and, they leave the journalists alone. But they actually pushed the camera guy down.
Well, the news department here at CBS Radio has noted that
it was CBS TV, as a matter of fact.
Really? The news department here has noted that MacArthur Park is typically only used for the dealing of drugs, so it's not typically... So it's not like it's a bunch of upstanding citizens there most of the time anyway.
True.
It sounds like... I mean, I haven't seen any footage, but it sounds like it just devolved into chaos then. It was just all kinds of bad. We had a very small version of that here with a bunch of, and again, this is guys who were just blocking the road, blocking traffic, and you really do understand at a certain point, like when the cops, it's simple self-preservation, it seems like, when the cops tell you, like, you've got to get out of the way, that you would do that.
I don't even wait for them to say it. Yeah. They start coming toward me, I just get out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody with an IQ above room temperature can figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care whether it's a cop or it's just plain guys from Texas. A guy with a gun and a nightstick starts walking towards me, I go to the other side of the street.
That's right.
I mean, that's the thing. So, all right. And so are the cops going to come out and do like a mea culpa, or are they going to come out and say, like, look, you shouldn't have been effing with us?
Well, there were some cops that did some wrong things. I mean, it is blatantly obvious. And they should not have screwed with, news guys. You don't mess with a news guy.
Well, see, but I guess that's what I wasn't aware of until you told me just now. I wasn't aware that the cops had sort of screwed with the media, which is an understood, as you said, sort of thing traditionally.
Yeah.
You don't do that.
Yeah, you don't do that.
Jesus.
But, you know, it wasn't all the cops. It was just, you know, a few. But you also have to understand, you know, there's some last-minute decision that gets made, you know, and the adrenaline is pumping. And, you know, they have no idea how many guns are in that park. And I can probably guarantee you there was at least 20 guns, if not more,
right,
in that park with all those people. And you got to wonder, you know, either I'm going to run them over or they're going to run me over. And so they get their adrenaline pumping. They know that they're a target. And even though they got all that gear on, you know, a round in the neck will kill you.
And, you know, and cops are very binary, you know, to no disrespect, but the cops are very, it's a very on-off proposition to most cops, that you are either on their side or you are an impediment. You are, I don't want to say enemy, but you're either somebody who's causing a problem or you're somebody who's not. And, you know, a lot of times it's sort of like anybody who's not, you know, wearing riot gear, you know, needs to be cleared out of here, like now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, it's a shame, you know, but, yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, they screwed up.
No, it's true. Well, you know what, in fact, I will, you know, and as Tim has noted here, that is actually close to, that's right in the Rampart area.
Yeah.
And with the, you know, which is a police department that has a history all its own. It's funny, we were just talking with our TV critic here about the Shield, and the Shield, the barn in Farmington, was, of course, based on the Rampart police scandal. And those guys have got, I mean, that's a bad area in like 100 different ways anyway.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, we were going to talk about Tom Boston, but you know what, we'll put up, we'll do it. We'll do it.
Well, what
tomorrow.
About him? I mean, I miss him already.
You know, he's dead.
Yeah, he is, you know.
he's dead, and life is for the living, so we're going to move on.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Well, I'll let you get back to your conference. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking about this again, as sort of a blame is placed or a cops do at some point. So.
All righty, sir.
All right, thank you. Jim Roop in Los Angeles. All right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, here comes the junta virus. A man in his 50s in rural Multnomah County is recovering from Oregon's 9th recorded case of the junta virus. Rodents carry this. They excrete this virus in their urine, droppings, and saliva. Ugh. People are infected when they clean up these rodent droppings. The virus was first recognized in 1993. The first case was in Wasco County in 1993, and the recent case was in Deschutes County after that. The health department said the symptoms are similar to those of the flu. The disease can be fatal. You might end up with an oxygen tank. And you might end up breathing through a tube.
You know, and the worst thing about all of these diseases is they all start off like the flu. I'm tired. I want something. Look, if I'm going to die some hideous, horrible death, I want something to look. The symptoms include bleeding black stuff out of your eyes. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. I'm tired of things that, you know, symptoms include flu-like, you know, because that can be any. And then every time I get a sniffle, I think that it's like SARS or something that's going to kill me.
So if you see any mouse poop, just leave it alone.
Don't ever
clean
up.
That.
Yeah, leave it there. Don't ever clean up rodent droppings anywhere. You people in Southeast, just leave it there. All right.
Well, let's talk about that Tom Poston and do the snuff watch.
Oh, here's a snuff watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
The comically gifted actor who played the straight man on Newhart and Mork and Mindy has died at the age of 85. He was a native of Ohio and was married to Suzanne Flechette, who was on the Bob Newhart show.
I did not know that.
Neither did I. Unless they just made this up afterwards.
It's so bizarre. This whole, he's been alive for 85 years, presumably married to her for decades.
Yeah.
I never knew he was married to her.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, she was hot in her day. Just stunning.
Anyway, he was on the Steve Allen show originally. He was a combination of Stan Laurel and Jack Benny. It took off after Steve Allen discovered him on Broadway and put him on the show. He transitioned from New York and theater to L.A. and television and film, starred in The Happy Hooker, The Rabbit Test, and in recent years, Christmas with the Cranks, Beethoven's Fifth, The Princess Diaries 2, the classic television show Mork and Mindy also. On Newhart, he played George Utley, the handyman who couldn't fix anything at the inn that Bob Newhart ran. And on Newhart show Bob, he was the star's former college roommate. He also was on numerous game shows. You may have seen him if you watched the Game Show Network. To Tell the Truth, he was on that. He also guest starred in Get Smart, The Love Boat, St. Elsewhere, The Simpsons, Coach, Murphy Brown, Home Improvement, Touched by an Angel, Will and Grace, Dream On, Just Shoot Me, and at 70 Show. He was married three times. And he married Suzanne Plachette, which nobody knew about, apparently, in 2001.
Oh, in 2001?
Yeah.
Really?
That's the first time I've heard of it.
It seems strange that the press wouldn't have talked more about that.
No.
Because they were co-stars for such a long time. I guess they weren't really co-stars, though, because he wasn't on the Bob Newhart show. He was only on Newhart, and
right.
Suzanne Plachette...
She wasn't in that one.
Because that was yeah. Mary What's-Her-Name.
Mm-hmm.
How strange. Well, I guess you learn something every day. He was sort of just a big beefy guy. Kind of looked like a poor man's Robert Mitchum,
mm-hmm.
in a way. Just kind of a big barrel-chested guy. And it's amazing he was on all those shows. He's one of those guys, too, that, like so many of them, you never really knew his name unless you were a real TV fan.
And his son lives in Portland.
Is that true, Tom Hostinson?
Yeah. Mm.
You know, but he was funny, and it's like he totally did look like one of those 50s Broadway guys. You could totally see him being like one of those Cat on a Hot Tin Roof guys. Mm. Kind of looked like character actor Mike Starr. Very very similar look. So, again, one of those guys you didn't know his name, but you saw him, and you're like, oh, yeah, that guy. So, all right, Tom Poston, dead, freaking dead at 85. There you go.
Beware of the Hunta virus and hail the size of golf balls out there today.
Yeah, apparently they just look. What did Peter Carlin say? He said it was grim and something, and then you said it was covered in white and it's dead, and we're all going to die from something or other. So if it's not
it's the quickening,
if it's you're going to share Ramona's fate. If it's not huge chunks of ice from the sky, it's going to be something from a mouse.
Ominous dark clouds and thunderclaps.
Jesus. So there you go. Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen, he returns at 4. And may the good news be yours. He returns at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 7 o'clock this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. So he's back in just over an hour.
Be careful in the hail.
I certainly will.
503-733-2970. Real quickly, I want to make an announcement. We didn't really do an announcement for this yesterday, so I'm just going to say we have now the official first stanza of the Portland Anthem, because we've talked about Portland anthems, because we are creating this one line at a time. The audience is helping to script out, to write the official Portland Anthem, which we are then going to record. We'll record it, we'll produce it, and we will present it to the city. And Seamus, among other people, had noted, one of our esteemed listeners had noted that it's a lot easier when you know the tempo and the cadence and the rhythm and the whatever. And so Jack Lee of Clackamas had sent this to us. Jack Lee of Clackamas wrote what we are going to use as the first few lines to the official Portland Anthem. And the first, it's actually the first stanza, I guess. I think it's a stanza. That's a word I use and I don't really know what it means. I think it's the first four lines. I think it's two couplets. Well, whatever. It is this. It is roses and raindrops and acres of green, rivers of microbrewed beers and caffeine. I like that for a lot of reasons.
I like that.
I like it because it takes the Sound of Music thing, which is raindrops and roses and whiskers and kittens and whatever. It turns it around, roses and raindrops. And then it's also a reference to the Rose and Raindrop, which is a great restaurant and a bar that actually, which is an institution, which closed. It's got Acres of Green, which I like. And then it does Rivers, so it references River City, but it's Rivers of microbrew beers and caffeine. And I'm getting a lot of suggestions that are like whores and sluts and big bottles of crack or whatever. And that's just something we're probably not going to be able to present to the city. I really do, as much as I want this to sound like it's something our audience came up with, by the same token, I think it would be cool if it's a song we actually can, if there's like an actual chance that the city will adopt it. So let's try to avoid something about meth labs and hookers. Let's try not to do that. But this has got rivers of microbrewed beers and caffeine. I think we can get away with that. I think beers and caffeine, that's tame enough that the city might actually use it. So, roses and raindrops and acres of green, rivers of microbrewed beers and caffeine. So now we need a second stanza that has more or less the same syllable pattern, more or less the same kind of, you know, kind of, more or less the same kind of flow to it. And then we'll go into like a pre-chorus and then the hook. And then we just got to do it one more time and we're done. So there you go. That's, if you want to read it again, it's at rickemerson.com. RickEmerson.com or MySpace.com/RickEmerson. We got a break here. We'll come back to wrap things up after this. Like us at 3. Don and Mike at 7. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. coming up at 3. Tom Likas, down to Mike at 7. Tomorrow on the Rick Emerson Show, I have no idea. Other crap. Including this, I really meant to get to the story about Lara's friend, Janet.
Oh, yeah.
I know, I suck. Well, and I didn't get to this Courtney Love story either. Randall, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick. I just wanted to defend the honor of MacArthur Park for a second, the way you and Jim were talking about it there. It's really cleaned up, man. It's pretty nice. I live a couple blocks away. I'm in town visiting, and, you know, there haven't been drug deals or anything. There's just a bunch of nice people hanging out there. Maybe in Bukowski's day it was all messed up, but it's cool now.
So you're saying that it's better than you? Because there was a time when it was just infested with...
Oh, yeah, and they put cameras up and stopped all the drug deals and stuff, and now it's nice. Families playing soccer, and it's a nice place to hang out.
All right, it's just the cats playing with balls of yarn everywhere you look.
Oh, yeah, it's cute.
Excellent. All right, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. All right. And the music's starting any moment now?
30 seconds.
All right. Let's see. Well, I've got all of these emails to read. Many dozens of them about Scotty J, by the way.
Scotty just seems pissy lately.
Yes, he does.
I mean, I love the guy. But
I do, too. I share that assessment.
Yeah.
Rick, did you know that Mom Gert Boyle of Columbia Sportswear was Matt Groening's inspiration for the CEO of Mom's Friendly Robot Company? Hello? What the hell is that?
That's your computer.
I don't think it's me.
Tim's not there.
I'm not pressing anything.
Huh.
Well, okay. Anyway, so yeah, Gert Boyle was the model for Mom from Mom's Friendly Robot Company, who I love, by the way, Futurama. Stick a bastard in it, you crap! All right. Hi, the Rick Emerson Show wishes to thank CNN radio correspondents Bob Costantini and Jim Roop today, as well as Peter Carlin from The Oregonian. The Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Pick her up on the back of today's Portland Mercury. Do it while it's there. Scotty J is our intrepid VA. The gatekeeper is Dave Zinn. And, of course, the man with the plan in a four-door sedan is Tim Riley at the AM 970 New News Department. He's back at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 7 o'clock. Like us next. Donna Mike at 7. Stephanie Miller tomorrow, 6 to 8. Dennis Miller, 8 to 11. And, of course, we'll be back in 20 hours. As always, my friends, don't let the bastards grind you down. And please, do try to help the retarded. See you all tomorrow. Thanks, kids. Bye.
How's your woodcock doing? Oh, my darling little woodcock.